It is a new week here at One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Steve Tasker. We're going to take a look back at the Bills' weekend rookie minicamp.
Also, we're going to take a look at the life of former Bills head coach Chuck Knox. He passed away this last weekend. One of his former players was a former head coach in the National Football League. Jim Haslett joins us at 2.
Also, we are going to take a look at the Bills' roster. Can they still find a starter in free agency? If so, at what position? Answer that question for us.
One Bills Live starts now.
Oh, a great tackle by Steve Tasker.
Into the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown!
And he's got it at the 10-yard line.
Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo! The Bills win it in overtime.
That's it. One Bills Live. That's the name of our show. I almost said One Bills Drive, but that's our location. One Bills Drive with One Bills Live. Right next door to the New Era Field in Orchard Park. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. Welcome to a new week for the show. John Murphy and my broadcast partner here, Steve Tasker, ready to go for the next 3 hours. You look really ready to go.
I'm good. In my second straight week of working regular.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
With no days
right.
off.
Well, it's good to have you here, Steve.
Coming down the stretch.
Did you have a good weekend?
It was good. My Mother's Day, you know, great. It was good weather. It's always, you know, it's always kind of relaxing when it's somebody else's holiday, you know, where you can just kind of... And it, particularly when it's the kids and the mom, you know, the kids have to take care of everything for you. So
they do, right?
That's nice.
My wife and I had this discussion.
It's like a day off holiday.
My wife is the mother of my children. So don't I owe her something on Mother's Day? Some sort of recognition or some sort
yeah.
of gift? I don't know. I struggle
absolutely.
With that every year.
But you know, yeah, but you know what?
She doesn't want it. She'll say, I'm not your mother.
You know
it's
what
not
my,
up to you.
Yeah, but you know what my job is? Well, you have two boys.
Two boys.
I got four with a daughter.
Right.
And they're scattered to the four
right.
winds. I got to, you know, make sure they all, hey, it's Mother's Day. You know, call
yeah.
your mom.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
I do
text
that.
Text them.
Yeah.
You know, hey, you guys, you know, Mother's Day's coming up. Make sure you get all that. And plus, I did make sure that we were out to a big family brunch yesterday. So we
That's
had
good.
It was good. So we have.
Yeah, it was a nice
Yeah, you
got to
rise up. Mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. So you got to kind of cover your bases.
Yeah. No, it was a good weekend, right? I mean, the weather was okay, not great. You got a little golf in, right?
That not yesterday, no. Not on Mother's Day.
No.
That's bad.
That goes back to your mama ain't happy.
Yeah, that's a bad move there.
It's a bad look.
Even if you float that out there, you can test the waters like on Thursday, Friday, headed into the weekend to see how it's going to go on Mother's Day. And if it gets, you know, shot down pretty quick, you know, no, I wasn't going to golf. I was just saying.
Throw it out there. Trial balloon.
Just trial out there, and then if that gets shot down, if you want to do something on your own, you got to test the waters. If she's got something good going on with all the kids and you're not involved, then you got a free pass, but that's not always
I spent a little time out here Saturday, came out and watched a little bit of the rookie minicamp, mostly because we did not get a chance on Friday because we were in here. And I was impressed. It was rookies. What do we say, about 54, 53 rookies?
Yeah, I've still got the thing. It's like 52,
yeah.
49, I think, on the sheet that we had, but there was, you know, there's always a handful of more or less.
Most of them are gone now, but, of course, the draft picks are still here and worked with the team in the off-season conditioning work today, and the undrafted free agents are here. They got one great story. I love the story. One tryout player gets the invite to stick around, fullback Zach Olstedt,
yep.
who comes from Winona State, was a tryout player here over the weekend.
Him.
They signed him. Yep, they let running back Aaron Green go on the waived injured list. I be honest, Zach Olstedt did not jump out at me, and I watched Saturday's practice pretty intently, but that's okay. Somebody liked him. Love stories like that. You come in here for a tryout, you wind up with a chance now. It's a great story.
Yeah, it is. And it's that time of year where you kind of get to know these guys. And listen, for that Olstedt coming in here, he's got to be – his family's got to be stoked. You know, they're like, wow, awesome, you know, because
yeah.
he got a contract. I mean,
yeah.
he's that's a guy who's actually looking down the road and seeing light. At
yeah.
the end of the tunnel, and it's going to be pretty fun to watch him go through training camp.
It was good to watch Saturday's practice in depth, and I have to say, Steve, I was impressed. Josh Allen, I mentioned to you this morning when you came in, the concept of a live arm. This is a guy with a live arm. Wasn't perfect, missed a couple times downfield, but he's got a live arm, and you notice when you're watching practice. The ball is getting there in a hurry. And I might add this, too, and people mentioned this after Friday's workout, those who were here Friday. He's not afraid to lead. I mean, I saw him several times, you know, receivers would come back to the huddle after running downfield, and he would go over to them and talk with them and gesture to them as if, hey, this is my offense. That was the play that I called, and this is what we're looking for. And along with that, a lot of time with the offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll, who spent a lot of time actually with the other quarterback who was here as well from Shippenburg State. He didn't get to stick, but Ryan Zepeticki got, it seemed to me, the same sort of intense one-on-one attention from Brian Daboll that Josh Allen had. Obviously, the stakes much higher for Josh Allen. I'm just saying I was impressed with one day of practice work from Josh Allen. That's all I'm saying.
Well, that's what everybody said leading up to it. And we've been scouring, you know, the media world in the last week or two talking to people about what they thought of him now that everything, we don't have to say what if at right. the draft. And, you know, we had Chris Mortensen. We had Chris Mortensen on last week, and he went on, and he said the one thing about Josh Allen and the people he talked to is that the guy jumps out in his physical ability. He's got a big arm. He's a big guy, and you put him with a bunch of quarterbacks, he's going to stand out because of his ability to sling it. And you saw it on Saturday. I know you were, like, talking about it all week.
I want to see more.
You're going to blow a couple hours on Saturday and come in here. Not me.
No, I know. It was a couple hours, but it was worth it. It was worth it. Yeah. And, you know, I won't be doing it every Saturday.
So was it, like, lockdown? Did you have to, like, you know,
actually, I forgot
assume the position and go against the wall, get frisked and everything?
I forgot my key.
You forgot the key, so you had to kick to the door and ask somebody.
No, I talked myself in.
Right. Don't say that, because everybody's going to come over and say, well, if Murph can talk himself in,
I can. Well, a couple of people knew who I was. I'm talking security guys. They're great.
Right.
But, yeah, I had to talk myself in. But, no, it wasn't locked down. There were some Bill staffers watching. Yeah, it's okay. You can come out and watch.
You think they'd? There's a lot of guys. There's more people who don't know who I am than there are who do.
That's not true. That's why you're doing the show, right? That's what I was told. You're doing the show to reinvigorate your profile?
Yeah.
No, not really.
No.
We got a good show today and a couple of good guests coming up today. One of them coming up at 2 o'clock is a familiar name and face and a friend of mine that I've known for 30-some years. Jim Haslett played here, linebacker, right? Former draft pick of the Bills, linebacker, a Pro Bowl linebacker for the Bills, who now, of course, is coaching in the league. He is a assistant coach, linebackers coach for the Cincinnati Bengals. I believe he's going into his third year now with the Bengals. But we'll talk with him about the Bengals. He's got Preston Brown there now. We also want to talk with him about Chuck Knox, the former Bills head coach who passed away early yesterday, I believe it was, late Saturday, early Sunday. Has drafted here when Knox was the head coach. Jim Haslett played for Chuck Knox, and I'm sure he has some pretty good memories of Chuck Knox. I knew Chuck Knox when he coached here, an impressive man. I was a young reporter, Steve, mid-20s, maybe 24, and filled in a couple of occasions for the late, great Stan Barron on the Chuck Knox Show, Monday night radio show. This is such a different era. The head coach on Monday nights would drive to the WBEN studios on Elmwood Avenue to do a one-hour talk show, take phone calls from fans. It was great.
That is a different world.
It was a different world. Monday night, which is now the biggest work night they have here, Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah, they grind it on Monday nights.
He'd drive in, light up a cigar about 10 to 12 inches long in this tiny little studio, and Chuck Knox would take questions from the audience. I had to host that a couple of times. He was an impressive guy. Came from the Rams where he won, came here to Buffalo, turned the Bills around as head coach here. You know, made them into a playoff team. Of course, the 1980 AFC East Division champions with a sensational year. Kind of, he changed the culture here. He did change the culture, you'd have to say. 5 seasons coaching here. Got all tangled up with his team in the 1982 labor dispute, the strike in 1982, and that pretty much was the end of it, replaced by Kay Stevenson in 83. But an impressive coach who went on from Buffalo to Seattle, where I guess he's most remembered. He had Rams, Buffalo, and Seattle. He had some stops as an assistant coach. Chuck Knox passed away out in Palm Springs, California, at the age of 86. But he was a culture changer here. He changed the Bills of the mid to late 70s. The culture was losing and losing badly, and turned them into into the division champs and a playoff team for a couple of years.
Yeah, and some of the guys that I got here in 1986, and some of the old veterans that were here played for him. A lot of them played a handful of years, and they had a lot of respect. You could tell when they spoke about him, he was a different guy. Of course, by the time I got here, it was right at the beginning of Marv Levy era. So they had been through 2 or 3 head coaches that were not impressive and didn't really do.
Well, they went from Knox to Kate Stevenson to Hank Bullough to Marv.
Right. Jim Ringo was in there. Was he Springer? He was in there early in the 70s.
Yes.
It was before Chuck. And Jim Ringo was an assistant here when I got here in 86. And he was a former head coach. But, yeah, they spoke with a lot of respect in their voice for Chuck Knox. And no doubt he was old school. You know, you talk about guys who come in and they've got the new leadership kind of stuff, and This was back when football was still padded up and you were hitting hard in practice, and it was, yeah, you know, you don't, you get a water break when you get a water break, and you know, it was just a different time. And he was a really good coach in that era and got three different teams to the playoffs. That says a lot.
Yeah.
Back then, that was not done. You just didn't get a chance to do that as a head coach. And Chuck Knox is no doubt a legendary figure. And you talk to guys who played for him, like Jim Haslett, who was a teammate of mine for a minute my first year here in Buffalo. They got a lot of respect for him. He was a coach that had some success, and that always does it.
Old school guy. Yeah, they did have respect for him because he came with that great reputation from the Rams, you know, winning division titles out in L.A., and then he brought a lot of those players with him too. I mean, he had guys, he had favorites. You know, he'd bring his veterans. Butch Robertson, linebacker. Phil Villapiano came here under Chuck Knox. There were others too. He brought a lot of those guys here, and they had success here with Chuck Knox. Joe Ferguson, the quarterback, obviously, and Joe Cribbs at running back for a couple of years. Again, the strike, if there was no strike in 82, you wonder how much longer Knox would have stayed and how successful he might have been. He had issues with management from time to time, not happy about some players. I think Al S. has, my memory, if memory serves, Jim Haslett was one of the guys who the general manager didn't want to pay. It wasn't Chuck Knox at that time, the general manager. Didn't want to pay. Has held out for a while.
Stu Barber?
I think it was Stu Barber, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Good one. But Chuck Knox was an important figure in the history of the franchise, and we'll talk with Jim Haslett, now coaching the Bengals linebackers, about that at 2 o'clock. The other big story, Stephen, we got a good guest here, Andrew Brandt, who covers the business of the NFL on various websites, including MMQB. Yeah. He's going to join us to talk about kind of a late-breaking development, Steve. We have breaking news. The Supreme Court has struck down the Supreme Court today, this morning, struck down a federal law that prohibits sports gambling, a landmark decision that gives states, individual states, the go-ahead to legalize betting on sports, including the NFL. This all came about from a lawsuit in New Jersey. So states that want to offer legal sports betting, sports books now, can do it. New York is expected to be one of the states to quickly get into the legal bookmaking game.
Well,
sports books.
There's money to be made there,
so
you know New York State will be in the front of the line for that. But and New Jersey is actually the state that actually brought the lawsuit to get the federal sanctions lifted. And for most of you, I'm not a gambler. I mean, I don't bet on game. I don't bet on the NFL. I never have, and I don't spend much time at all in casinos. You know, like once a year, for a bachelor party, my sons will invite me and we'll go up. But I'm not one of those guys. But I'm telling you, for an average, and a lot of people are disinterested in the gambling thing. I get it. But let me tell you something. Most people are going to see the difference. For me, what I see on the horizon right immediately, Murph, when you watch a game, you're going to see a ton of advertising for sports books, for gambling, for, you know, remember FanDuel was huge a few years ago before that rug got pulled out from under everybody.
Yeah.
FanDuel and DraftKings.
Yes.
These two
fantasy
things. Those got the rug pulled out from under them right away. But they're going to be back, and you're going to have other sports books and other things. Plus, on the horizon down the road, it's going to change things dramatically, even if you're sitting in the stands.
Well, you and I both read a piece written a couple of weeks ago by Albert Breer, pretty good sports writer for MMQB, who talked about what could be on the horizon and what was discussed at the owners' meetings in Orlando late March. You know, the owners knew that this ruling could happen and knew that it was in the pipeline and maybe sports gambling would be legalized. Mm-hmm. And one of the things discussed was like prop bets in game. So in Albert Breer's example, maybe not this year, but soon you wouldn't think it'd be that difficult. You're sitting at a game.
Yeah, explain what a prop bet is, because I'm
like a non-outcome of the game bet.
Like
what do you think is going to happen on this play?
What's going to happen
on this series?
Like you can do it on your phone. You'll have an app. You'll have say, listen, I think so and so the kicker is going to score the next points in this game.
Yeah.
And you have odds or whatever, and you can bet what you want and whatever.
So you have the concept of people sitting at games on their phone betting on how this series is going to end: touchdown, field goal, interception, and that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah,
live while it's going on at a game. First of all, you'll have no idea what people are cheering for anymore.
Right.
What was that for? I don't know. Somebody just lost $300.
You're right. I mean, you'll have people, random people up here. Something will happen. A guy will drop a pass or something, and he'll agonize over it. And they're like, you'll understand. It's a prop bet.
We'll talk about that and open up phone lines on this a little bit later, and we'll talk with Albert Andrew Brandt about that. But I have to say at the outset, Steve, I don't know if I'm looking forward to this. I'm not a fan of fantasy football, mostly right. because I don't like when people root for something other than their team winning a game. Yeah. You know what I mean? To me, the games have always – and you're kind of old school, I think, like me. The games have always been enough for me. You know what I mean? Who wins, who loses. Always have been enough. I don't need other
Here's
action.
The thing, too, and I'll tell you this, and it sounds crazy, but I think a lot of people put themselves into this spot where – for instance, when the Bills – something happens, the Bills are doing well, and like last year when they get the playoffs and way back when I played, people would make bets so that if something bad happened, they would win because they couldn't stand to have – to pour all their emotion and all their money into the same bet because they just couldn't believe it would happen for them like that. So they bet almost a bet against their team so that if their team lost, their emotions would be down, but at least their pocketbook would be – you know, people can't do that. They can't play all in. They can't all go all in because they just can't believe things would happen that well for their team. So they make a bet either for or against, so that if one good thing happens, you know, it won't be. You know, they got to bet against it because they can't believe that it'll be work out so for them. I guess you know they bet against so they win. You know, so
it's
a loss win
gratification.
Right, they can't stand. When a bad thing happens to their team or they can't believe something good's going to happen for their team, so they bet against it happening, thinking that it just couldn't happen.
You know, and people are familiar with the prop bet concept at the Super Bowl, right? You bet on everything, and maybe that takes place in every game now. One of our producers, Thomas Hollander, says, prop bet, how long will the national anthem run? I can see how that people start betting on that. You know, you're getting settled into your seat. You can't wait for kickoff. I got to get something going on the national anthem. I mean, and to me, that's not a good development for the game. I'm not anti-gambling. I enjoy following horse racing a little bit, but I don't bet on any other sports, and I don't go to casinos. I've probably been in a casino half a dozen times in my entire life, normally just
it's
to get to somewhere else in the building, you know. But I'm not anti-gambling, but I just don't think this is going to be a good development for any sport, and yet you can't ignore it now. It's coming, and NFL owners have already discussed it.
I think the big thing for you and me both is we're a little bit apprehensive about what changes it's going to occur because you can't really anticipate, you can't see the future and how it's going to change, but there is change on the horizon. And maybe it is for the casual fan in the stands. Maybe it is for the way the game is perceived over the airwaves, on television, on your phone. But certainly we both suspect that maybe big changes are in order and we don't know what those are going to be. Right. It makes me apprehensive about what it's going to be like.
Change scares us. No, not really.
It does. Believe me.
Hey, so on the show today, we'll talk with Andrew Brand about that, and we'll talk with you about that as well. We also want to talk about this Buffalo roster now. They have ended rookie minicamp. Now the Bills have another 4 days, I believe, 4 days this week, 1 day next week, of the off-season conditioning program. And then next Tuesday, a week from tomorrow, they get into the OTAs. So they're still in conditioning. The rookies are here now with the veterans. You walked through there today and pointed out how rigorous it was. Another kind of heavy day of conditioning seen for the team.
They had them all out there working, running up and down. And they guys, they were breaking a sweat. I mean, they were running them through it. And there's a ton of guys there.
Yeah, well, now you got
a ton of guys.
The veterans plus
the veterans,
almost, almost 90 guys.
I think the veterans really want to be there today because they want to look at, you know, they want to
see
these guys yeah. too up close and personal. It's time to start getting to know them.
Is the roster set? That's the question, right? I mean, is this it? That's the question
that's
we want to
Twitter
start the
poll,
show with today. Yeah. And is there a starter out there that the Bills might still add to their roster? Can the Bills still find a starter in free agency? And if so, what position should they look? Wanted to talk about that with you. Give us a call. The lines are open, 803-0550 or toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. That's our Twitter poll. Can the Bills still find a starter in free agency? If so, what position? The Twitter poll is up. 71% of you right now say it's wide receiver. They still need. You think they still can find a starter at wide receiver? Maybe. 22% of you say they still can find a starter on the offensive line. Maybe. 4% of you think front seven defensively, linebacker, defensive line. 3% have something else in mind. Yes, other.
Yeah,
give us a call. Let us know what you think. The lines are open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, and a couple of interesting tweets.
Yeah, people are already starting to shout out at us from Bull City Vipers. They need both a solid receiver and the offensive line. Wouldn't hurt to add another defensive back as well. I think they're up there the next in DBs, but you're right. I mean, I think wide receivers, you can see, is running away from this. Also from Darrell F29. I'm sure most would say receiver, but I think the majority of the guys available are possession and slot types. I think the Bills have enough of those. I'm saying front seven. Even though that seems to be set, guys like Robert Ayers and John Hankins are still out there. So there, and there are. We got a little, it's not comprehensive, but a list of free agents that are still out there around the National Football League. And there are some names. And you go down the list, you know, the biggest names are at running back when you've got guys, you know, like Darren McFadden, Chris Johnson, DeMarco Murray still out there, Adrian Peterson, Mike Tolbert, who was a Bill last year, Terrence West, who had had some good seasons, Danny Woodhead, who I think he's kind of set to retire. But there are some guys out there, some real names. I mean, Adrian Peterson's a Hall of Famer. And, you know, he's out there. He still wants to play, but I think he's going to try and pick his spot. Now, for the wide receivers, for the Bills fans who have said, you know, that's where I think a free agent is going to come from. Some of the most notable free agents out there are guys that we've kind of downplayed as being possibilities for one reason or another, like Aurelius Ben is out there. Dez Bryant, of course, is out there. Brandon Marshall's out there. Jeremy Maclin is out there. Eric Decker is out there. And Jalen Strong is out there. You know, for guys who have played a lot of games, Dez Bryant and Eric Decker played in 16 games last year. Kamar Aiken played 15 games last year. So there's some guys out there who can play, but, I mean, you can take your pick because they're still sitting out there on the street. And, you know, for people who are hankering for the Bills to bolster the wide receiver spot, you know, you take your pick.
Let us know what you think. The lines are open at 803-0550 and toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-552-550. Or you can do it on Twitter. Let us know what do you think might be a possibility for the Bills. A couple of tweets on this from the tweet sheet from Ben Zott. Jari Evans and Jeremy Maclin, both starter quality options as free agents. And from Eric Ellis on Twitter. Love to have Dez Bryant on a one-year deal. They need help at receiver, although he's lost a step. That doesn't mean he can't contribute with any of the quarterbacks. Dez Bryant is probably the most notable name out there, Steve. He just doesn't seem like a fit here at this stage of his career and the type of player that maybe the Bills are looking for.
Well,
what do you think?
He's got a reputation for being a guy that's high maintenance, mm-hmm. and that is the exact opposite of the kind of guy the Bills have shown themselves willing to sign. They have been willing to trade away dominant players at positions, starting with Marcell Dareus, starting with highly talented player like Sammy Watkins. So bringing in a guy that is exactly like the type of guy they traded away. Now, certainly they got some things in return for those guys because they traded him. But signing Dez Bryant, to me, doesn't sound like it fits the personality and the culture, although Dez Bryant is a guy who can really go up and get it. I mean, he is a definite number one guy.
But he's lost it a little bit, right? I mean, he's – his numbers, I don't have him in front of me, but I know they've gotten worse every year the last 3 years, I believe. He's yeah. dropped off production-wise.
Well, and he's playing with a rookie quarterback 2 years ago on a 12-4 team and when their running game took over with Ezekiel Elliott. Then last year, their offensive line didn't perform as well, and they didn't throw it as well. Their offense was not as productive because I think it was up front. But Dez Bryant is still a guy. And let's face it, the only reason he's not in Dallas is because his cap number was enormous. And they had to move on from him. I think they would still like to have him on their team. But they know what they're getting in him. I think he's a big question mark for anybody else.
Can the Bills still get a starter in free agency? Now where we are at May, what are we, May 14th, right?
Right.
You've got to figure
that's
we're
right.
7 or 8 weeks away from the start of training camp, right, at the end of July. Is there still a starter out there available in free agency? Got phone lines open if you'd like to discuss, 803-0550 and toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Another from the tweet sheet from Minicamp Jack. There are guys still out there, Jeremy Maclin, Dez Bryant, et cetera, and more guys will come free post June 1st. So guys, especially at wide receiver, might be available. He goes on to say offensive line and linebacker could be other places they may look post-minicamp to evaluate and add competition for the long days at Fisher.
Yeah, I think one more from that, too, and I think this echoes my sentiment, too. You're right, long days at Fisher, and it gets back to this. Alex Foster tweets this in, and this is exactly the way I feel about it. GM, this is Brandon Bean, knows what he's doing. It's going to be some key acquisitions from other teams' training camp cuts. I think you might see a guy come in and really contribute to the Buffalo Bills who doesn't show up until the first week of the season. You know, we're going to be one of those guys that's either a cap hit or they have a young guy comes in, impresses them, and for economic reasons they think he can fill in. They're willing to take a step back a little bit and let a really good player go because they're just going in a different direction, or they've got another group of wide receivers that can cover for him. And, you know, it's a cap issue, or maybe the guy's just not good enough anymore. Nevertheless, there's going to be some guys who we're going to recognize on the waiver wire after training camp. I think that's exactly – Alex Foster tweets in, I think that's exactly what's going to happen. The Bills are going to get – just like they did last year.
Well, I was going to say one thing that we learned last year, one thing I learned last year was that Brandon Bean considers the roster a work in progress at all times
always.
Of the year. All times of the year, they can add play people.
I think it's that's a surprise for it. And I think, you know what, we've talked about a little bit this offseason. I think it's the way business is done now. I really think it's the way business is done.
Yeah, more so in the league now than before.
Yeah.
Give us a call and let's talk about it. We can talk about other things too. A couple of people have other comments. Let's go to Bob in West Seneca. Bob, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. How you doing?
Okay.
Hey, look, just a couple quick comments. Thanks for getting me on. And Chuck Knox, I really enjoyed those years. We've been going to the Bills games, me and my buddies. We're in our 60s and for a long time. And I remember Ground Chuck, the comment when he came to Buffalo, why he got that. He said, like, come on now, you go, guys. Three things happen when you throw a pass and two are bad. And you had Knox's nuts up in the stands with the tuxedos on. And he went out and got some really good football players with McCutcheon, Rosie Leakes. I remember Phil Villapiano. Those were the years when they came out on the field after that one big game because the fans wouldn't leave.
Yeah, and they beat the Rams with an overtime field goal. They beat the Rams, Mickemeyer.
Phil Villapiano, and we gave him a beer. And Phil Villapiano turns it over right away, and he goes, well, he goes, I only been here a little while. God, I love this town.
Yeah, there was one of the most memorable games, Steve. I can look up the score. They beat the Rams in overtime at then Rich Stadium, and they were rolling. I mean, I want to say it was a November game.
Did they go 5-0 to start that season, or one of those early seasons, the second year here?
Yeah, 5-0 to start 1980.
Yeah, and they went 6-5 the rest of the way to go 11-5.
They beat the Rams December 7th, 1980. In overtime, 10-7, Nick Mickemer with a field goal. Place went nuts. Fans wouldn't leave. Tom and West, Bob was right about that. And
real quick, too, on the wide receiver, I'd like to see him pick up Decker. Anytime I got a chance on watching a game when he was playing, it seemed, whether against Buffalo, it seems he's a real money third down player. So I wouldn't mind seeing him come into the Bills. And thanks again, guys. Have a nice
day. Okay, thank you.
And thanks, Bob. Yeah, and Decker's a big dude, too. He's like a 2'6", 210, 215 guy. He's a big target. So Decker would be a great addition, but I think he's been around a while. He's having a hard time at this point in his career.
Dropped off.
Yeah, he's having a hard time staying healthy as well. So they may shy away from him from that, but he may be a fill-in guy, no question, to bring it in, see what he can do, see what kind of shape he's in. But you're right. Eric Decker is a guy that I think – given what I saw with him at the New York Jets and heard about him, even when he was with the Denver Broncos, would fit the culture here better than maybe some of the other guys you're looking at, Dez Bryant, Jeremy Maclin, Brandon Marshall, and Michael Floyd. Although those other guys, some of those guys probably would fit the culture here as well, not just Eric Decker.
Got a guest coming up next who says, we don't need any receivers. You got me. Brandon Riley, second-year receiver, is going to join us from Nebraska. He was the training camp standout a year ago. Let's see how he's getting ready for his second year. He's coming up next in studio with us, wide receiver Brandon Riley, when we come back. It is John Murphy, Steve Tasker, One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to the show, One Bills Live. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, and our special guest, second-year wide receiver Brandon Riley in studio with us after the off-season conditioning workout today. Brandon, thanks for coming by. We appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate you having me.
I know these are busy days for you, but we appreciate you carving out a few minutes to be with us here today. What's this off-season program like? Steve was mentioning he thought today was pretty rigorous, pretty intense, huh?
Yeah, I mean, the workouts are tough, but, you know, they need to be tough, especially, you know, OTAs coming up and then, you know, that training camp grind. I mean, you need to be in the best shape of your life, and, you know, the strength staff's doing a great job preparing us for that.
You were one of the splash guys. Fans said, "Wow!" What? And they, you know, a lot of people thought you were going to make the 53 last year, and then you didn't. And then tell people what your year was like last year. It's not like you disappeared and went home and, you know, crawled under a rock. Tell us about your season last year and what happened to you after the 53 was made.
Yeah, I mean, just they said they wanted me on the practice squad. Right. And so, you know, I knew the road wasn't over there. And so, you know, every day just came and, you know, did my job on scouting. Sometimes they even had us playing corner. And so, you know, I was going to give the best look at corner to, you know, help the team win. And at the end of each practice, they had like a player development, which was kind of the practice squad to play against each other. And, you know, just kept making plays there and then worked my way up and finally got moved up towards
right.
the end.
Right. So that's the thing. People don't understand that you kind of disappear and they don't see you on Sunday. They don't realize you're playing wide out 6 days a week and you're in there, you're watching them practice, helping the team win and doing all kinds of stuff. And it's kind of a bonus. It's kind of plus to be able to keep playing football.
Yeah,
even
absolutely.
Though you're not getting to play on Sunday.
Yeah. You know, you definitely, whenever, you know, you can get a check, whether it's practice squad or active, you know, playing football, the game we love. I mean, you can't take any day for granted. And, yeah. you know, I just kind of had that mentality to enjoy every moment and, you know, whatever happened the next day happened.
So, on the active roster, the last third of the season then, essentially, right. the last five games, did it hurt when you weren't Sunday active, when you were one of the, you know, guys who were scratched off the list on Sunday?
You know, it was frustrating at times, especially, you know, throughout the week we had talked, you know, I'd probably be, you know, active or I might be active, but, you know, at the end of the day, you can't hang my head on that. And, you know, when it came Sunday, if I wasn't suiting up, I was, you know, we don't have cheerleaders here, so I was going to be the biggest cheerleader, you know, help the guys, just do what I can.
They probably didn't know. I mean, the whole receiving position was in a state of flux all season with injuries and guys in and out of the lineup and a trade and training camp. I mean, the whole receiving position was a little bit different last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was all over the place. It was an interesting first year for me, seeing, I think, you know, from OTAs at the end of the year, I think we were talking, we had, you know, 20-some receivers in and out of the room. And, you know, I stuck through the whole way. And so, you know, that was my goal to, when I, you know, signed free agent here, that my goal was to, you know, stay with the same team the whole way through. And, you know, I did that. And, you know, that's something I'm proud of.
And how big a difference has that made now? Now you've been around the block, you know, once, and now you're on your second lap, you know, coming in. Tell us how much different it feels this year.
Yeah, you know, the mind's not swimming as much, you know. Right. Last year coming in, really wasn't sure what to expect. And, you know, even with, you know, workouts, you know, I kind of got the gist of it. But, you know, we had a new offense this year, so it's kind of starting over with that side of things. But, you know, just mentally way more confident this year, and, you know, I'm looking forward to it.
With Brandon Riley, Bills receiver, going into his second year, how different are you from a year ago at this time? You came in right around this time last year, right, when the undrafted rookies came in.
Yep.
How are you better equipped now to be in the lineup and help the Bills now than you were 12 months ago?
You know, just more consistent and then more just mentally strong. And, you know, mental is half the battle in this league, you know, knowing you can do it. You know, I was pretty confident coming in, but now that, you know, I've been around, I've seen how the veteran guys, you know, Andre Holmes, Kelvin, guys like that, I see them and, you know, learn from them every day. And, you know, I'm just a lot more confident this year.
Is your body different, Brandon? Are you bigger? Or?
Yeah, definitely bigger and stronger. I mean, that's an ongoing process, though. I don't think you stop right. that until you get old like
yeah,
you.
But. Like me, right. Yeah, I stopped a long time ago. Tell me a little bit. I've said this before, and I don't know if it still holds true and what you think about it. Give me your take on it. I always said, listen, it's harder to get in the league than it is to stay in the league. Because once you get in, you know, like you said, you're getting a check. You can make a living being a professional athlete. Is it mm-hmm. easier now to stay in the league, hopefully to stay in the league, than it is to kind of get in that first year like last
year? Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what my receiver coach in college told me. He said it's harder to get in than stay in. And, right. you know, I feel I'm still kind of on that bubble because I, you know, I didn't get game snaps, so I'm still kind of like not all the way in really. So, you know, I'm not where I want to be. But I feel like I got my foot in the door a little, and so hopefully I can, you know, get on the field and make plays and, you know, get both feet in the door.
Yeah, I always felt like I was on the bubble. It's a good place to be because it keeps you motivated, right?
Oh, yeah, keeps your chip on your shoulder always.
Tell us a little bit. So we've been talking all the way around about this Josh Allen and how you probably caught some balls from him.
Today, I would think.
Yeah, just today was the first day.
Tell us about it. What do you think about it? What's his arm like? How's it been? How's the new guys with Tremaine Edmonds, this new draft class? Because you were part of these new guys coming in last year, and now you see another crop coming in. Tell us about them.
Yeah, well, offense and defense are split up right now, so I just walked by and saw Edmonds, the linebacker, and he almost looked like Kelvin from behind. So
right, he's huge.
That's a monster linebacker. But, you know, Josh Allen out there, he's big and strong. He got a very strong arm, and you know, it'll be a good quarterback competition, and, you know, whoever's back there, you know, I'm going to do my best to make them look good and, you know, help myself out.
What do you see from McCarron? You've had a couple weeks of work with him,
right? Yeah, you know, this is leadership. You know, he came over, doesn't know guys, but, you know, he made it pretty apparent right away. He's a leader, and, you know, he wants to be the guy back there, and, you know, everyone in the locker room, you know, we're not picking sides which quarterback we want, just whoever's back there, we trust them, and, you know, the receivers as a whole, we're going to do our thing to help them out in the team.
Last year, it came out, it was a brand-new coaching staff, bunch of new players, the roster turned, you were new. Now, you kind of got this culture of starting to build, and you kind of know what this team's supposed to look like and what it's supposed to feel like. Talk a little bit about how that has helped you guys build on what you did last year.
Yeah, definitely. Just the culture of the guys, a lot of hardworking guys, you know, not a lot of big-name guys. I know, you know, they had put an article in our locker about, you know, the Vegas hockey team this year and how they're kind of, you know, not a lot of big-name guys, but they all bought into the process and the system and the culture, and, you know, you see their success. And, you know, I think just last year we had the Bills as an organization had a big leap of growth, and, you know, we got a sniff of that playoffs, and, you know, I think everyone just ready to keep going, driving to the next level.
You were on the roster at the game in Miami December 31st, on the plane ride coming home. Have you ever experienced anything like that, the way
Nothing.
This town responded to? I mean, you had some big games in Nebraska.
Yeah.
But have you ever had anything quite like that?
Nothing. Just the locker room as a whole. I mean, I remember just standing back and looking, you know, guys like Kyle Williams, and just you could just see, you know, the emotion and, you know, how much it meant to guys like that. And then, you know, the plane ride, you got people hugging that don't even think they know each other. And then, you know, landing. I think we landed at like 1:30 in the morning. And
it was 2 degrees, yeah.
It was freezing cold. And, I mean, I think I saw people with no shirts on out there, signs. And there's thousands of people out there. It was a very neat experience. I'm glad I, you know, couldn't.
How motivating. Have you guys talked about when you get back together? I mean, you go back, they go down to Jacksonville, and the season's over, and you kind of break up, and then this is the kind of first time you guys get a chance to get back together. Has there been any reminiscing about how great it was at the end of last season, about, hey, it's motivation, let's get back there, let's do more?
Oh, yeah, everyone definitely talking about it, and, you know, that's the standard, is, you know, playoff caliber, get to the playoffs, and now don't just get there, but, you know, move your way through the playoffs, and, you know, fans deserve it, too. I mean, you saw probably videos, I'm sure. They were jumping off buses on the tables in Jacksonville. Like, yeah. Those guys are everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. And,
you know, they are the best fans. I got blessed. I mean, Nebraska, they have sellouts every game, and I come here, and it's crazy madness sellouts. And, you know, the fans are definitely a big part of the Bills, too.
With Bills receiver Brandon Riley, new receivers coach this year. Tell us about Terry Robiskie, what you've learned from him so far.
Yeah, he's I love him already as a coach. You know, he's got a lot of knowledge. He's been in the league a long time. Him and Chad Hall, they both, you know, take the receiver coaching duties, and, you know, it's nice having, you know, two different inputs. Chad, you know, played more recently, and Terry's been coaching a long time, and, you know, our room's really coming together, I think, and learning this playbook, because, you know, it is tough, but, you know, they're doing a great job getting us prepared.
We're asking, you know, listeners today about what the Bills need. I'm sure you feel your room might be complete, right, with the group you have at receiver. You probably look around and see guys who can do some things, you know, when you look around and see some of the veterans and some of the young guys, two new rookies, two draft picks coming in this year.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we don't have a lot of big-name guys in there. Obviously, Kelvin's a pretty big name, but, you know, we feel confident there, and everyone has, you know, we feel a role that they can contribute to this team. And, you know, in training camp, it's going to come down to the wire, you know, who makes it. And, you know, I wish all those guys luck, but, you know, I hope, you know, I'm one of those last guys standing.
Brandon, thanks. We appreciate you coming
in. Great talking to you.
Yeah, good talking with you.
I know you got to go.
Got to show these quarterbacks how to golf.
crush them.
That's take the some money,
quarterbacks
too.
Like that when you crush them.
Those are the guys that have money, too.
I know. That's why I said bring a checkbook.
Brandon Riley, Bills second-year wide receiver, in studio with us. John Murphy, Steve Tasker. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Show rolls along. One Bills Live. Again, our thanks to Brandon Riley. Steve, you remember, you were doing preseason games last year. He was a star.
Yeah.
And when he was...
He lit it up. He was catching everything.
Yeah.
Making, you know, tough catches.
Yeah. When he did not make the 53-man roster at the end of training camp, people were livid. We were taking calls on the show. People were done with the Bills. How could they release Brandon Riley? It got a little bit out of hand. They knew enough to keep him around on practice squad, and then promoted him to the active roster for the last third of the season.
Yeah,
he might have something to say about the receiving core, right? I mean, a good possession type receiver with a year in the league.
Here's
I
the thing:
dismiss his chances.
He's big enough.
Yeah,
he's going to be. He's big enough to take a hit and come back and play the next week. You know, sometimes you worry about that with guys.
6'2".
Yeah,
they listed him as 200 pounds a year ago. He looked bigger to me up top, didn't he?
Yeah,
than he was
and you
a
get
year
guys
ago.
like my size or smaller or as small, you know, like Austin Prohl. I mean, that may be an issue with him. You get inside and you start taking hits, and it's hard to stay healthy throughout the rigors of an NFL season. Guys who can do it are rare, but the bigger they are, the more they can kind of hang in there. And you see here some highlights of the preseason: Riley covering kicks, making a tackle against the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, it was the last, you know, and it was that game where he had to make some special teams plays to lock down a spot. And of course,
even then, it wasn't enough.
No, it wasn't
enough. You know what though? After a year of in the system and a year of playing on a practice squad, the coaches will probably grow to trust him. The quarterbacks will get to know who he is. Although now he's got completely new quarterbacks.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, it's never easy to make a squad in the NFL, but certainly he's been around the block once, and he knows he's going to be able to focus in on, I think, not so much focus in on what he needs to do, but know what he doesn't have to do.
Right.
You know, so he'll be able to get better at those fundamental things that he's got to get better and do well. And certainly covering kicks will probably be part of it. But nevertheless, this is a spot. He's got to feel like he's got a pretty good chance to make the squad this year.
I would think so.
I think I agree with him.
Bills need a starter. What do you think? That's our Twitter poll. Can they still find a starter in free agency? If so, at what position? Call us up. Let us know. We got time here. We got a guest coming up at 1:30, Andrew Brandt. But in the meantime, let us know who would be a potential starter for the Bills who's still not on a roster. 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. Votes on Twitter. Most of you are looking at wide receivers. 72% say they can still find a starter in free agency at wide receiver. 21% say offensive line, 4% say front seven, 3% have something else.
Yeah, we've got another Chris Pearson tweets in. He says, I'm not the only fan who thinks that Murray, meaning DeMarco Murray, could help the Bills. He's a running back. He's on the free agent market. He's a guy that led the league in rushing, has bounced around since he had an enormous amount of success in Dallas. But he's also a guy that is a big, strong, physical, straight-ahead guy who I think spent last year in Tennessee. And I think he's still got some things to offer, no question about it. It'd be interesting to get him in, see what he looks like. But he's certainly an NFL-quality back who has had a lot of success, led the league in rushing 3 years ago. So,
there's some guys out there. What are you going to do with a receiver, DeMarco Murray?
No. He's a running back.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's what I meant to say. What are you going to do with another running back? Where are you going to play him?
They've got Chris Ivory. Ivory, the knock on Chris Ivory is not that he isn't a good running back, but he hasn't been durable, and he's 31 years old. I don't know how DeMarco Murray is going to be long in the tooth as well. But you got to have somebody so Shady doesn't have to carry it 25 times a game. You want him to carry it 15 to 20 and or 20 to 25 maybe on a big game. But you certainly don't want him or touch it that many times a game. Maybe not carry it from the backfield, but carry, you know, have 8 or 10 catches and 15 rushes, and that'd be plenty. You don't want him to have to do that every week. You want to have guys also that can come in and keep somebody fresh in the fourth quarter, particularly a guy like who's big and strong and can run, like Murray or Chris Ivory, to come in the fourth quarter when you want to grind it out and churn out first downs. You get into a 4-minute offense when you're taking the play clock down to 1 or 2 seconds. Grinding out a 4-yard gain, getting back in the huddle, waiting to call the play, getting up to the line, down to 2 or 1 on the play clock, grinding out another 4 yards. You got a third and 1.5, and grinding out another first down after another play clock. That's how you win games, and you need a guy to do that.
Shady averaged 18 carries per game.
That's
last
perfect.
Year.
That's perfect.
Last year.
Yeah. That's
16
perfect.
Games, 18 average, yeah. 18. I just don't know. I mean, on the list of
but
things,
he also led the team in receptions.
Yeah. That's a problem.
You know, and that's okay, but
not what
you're looking for.
But I just don't – that would not be my priority to add another running back. Receiver, I can be convinced of that. Jake Bell tweets in, maybe not a starter, but we could find some solid depth players. I don't necessarily like the wide receivers available, older and slow.
Right.
Maybe there will be an offensive lineman available to come in and compete. But other than that, I think we should let the young guys compete and see what we got. Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I mean,
yeah, I don't have a problem.
You want to be open to improvements if something comes, but I wouldn't be forcing the issue to try to find – I wouldn't be forcing – even at receiver, I wouldn't be forcing the issue. I agree with the guy on Twitter. That group of receivers, you went through the names. There's nobody out there that I'm thinking, get him, right? There's no. Right. They all have serious deficiencies and holes in their game.
Yeah, and I think most people are of that mind that right now, I think the front office, they're doing everything right. I mean, they're just waiting to see who's going to drop off of one of these rosters. And if there's somebody that can help them, then grab them. And I think my remarks and I think the tweet that I just read, his thought was, listen, DeMarco Murray is not coming in to replace Shady, but certainly he would be a different kind of back. And they used Mike Tolbert last year, who was completely different than Shady, as a backup running back. So they kind of had two fullbacks on the roster, Tolbert and DeMarco, along with Shady. And I think if you put a DeMarco Murray in there, he's a running back, and he's also probably got a little more experience running in a zone scheme running game that Brian Daboll in. But I wouldn't have anybody coming in here to even try and. Shady's is not in a running back competition to be the starter on this team. He's the guy. Anybody who comes in's got to know that going in.
Can the Bills still find a starter in free agency? Brian Rossignol's tweet: someone else's garbage is somebody's treasure. They should grab young, healthy, impressionable, overlooked treasure, not an old dog who'll take valuable reps from an up-and-coming star. The young guys who have something to offer, they don't get away that often. I know what you're saying. They don't get away. They don't wind up in free agency, the young guys, unless you got a line on somebody that no one else sees, no one else believes.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I see that mentality. The only way I see that happening is if a guy comes to Buffalo and all of a sudden something clicks for him that somehow didn't exist at another team, like they just didn't see or didn't have an opportunity for him to show. And I don't think that watching him from the Bills watching another training camp happen or another OTAs or watching from another – even whatever other roster makeups are for other teams, I don't think you can get a sense of that somewhere else. Now, certainly there may be a rookie free agent out there who gets dropped by another club, and he signed with that club as soon as the draft was over, and the Bills really never got a shot at him. And then he comes to Buffalo, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, look at this guy. Because of the situation on another team, he didn't fit in or wasn't going to make, like Brandon Riley here last year. You know, another team, you sign another guy who had a preseason like Brandon Riley did for the Bills last year, and he comes in to Buffalo, and all of a sudden he's even better. And that could happen, but I don't know how you anticipate that happening. I don't know it's going to be one of those guys that's going to surprise the Buffalo Bills front office just like he would surprise the fans. I mean, I think Brandon Riley and the way he played last year was a little bit of a surprise for a lot of people. And I think that's kind of the guy you're looking for, you're referring to in the tweet, find a hidden treasure or a raw gem. I don't think there's any way of knowing that before you get him in here and let him run through 2.5 weeks of practice.
A couple of tweets about a receiver in Cleveland who's been mentioned as a maybe being possibly available. Corey Coleman, former first-round pick. Jeff Froways tweets in, what about trading for Corey Coleman from Cleveland? And then another tweet, I'll try to put it together with that one, mentions Corey Coleman. Now I've lost it. He says Corey Coleman might be available. Here it is. Yeah. Corey Coleman might be available. Maybe the Bills should actually trade for Corey Coleman. I don't know that the Browns are going to put him on the free agent market. I don't think they're going to release him.
Could get him for a sixth or seventh round or one of those. I mean, that's what you're talking about now. You just got two pretty good options or at least possibilities.
Here's the tweet, Brett Sheepice. I think it's more likely Buffalo lands a starter via trade. Bean will use a late-round pick for Corey Coleman-type player. Yeah, late round is fine.
Maybe.
I'd be up for that.
But if you got a late rounder, you just got two pretty good late rounders this year in Austin Prohl and Ray McLeod III. So what, are you going to wait till next year to do that? You know, I mean, let's get the guy this year. Let's let these guys – let's go with Ray
Except
and
Coleman
Austin.
Is a former first rounder, and he's had some injury issues.
Yeah, if you have – and you know this, we've talked – oh, my gosh, we talked about this for weeks. If you're a first-round player in the NFL, you've got measurables. You're big, strong, fast.
There's a reason why you're first-round.
Yeah, there's a reason because you look it. You look like it. So Coleman will come in and impress physically. But like you said, in Cleveland, he had some issues staying on the field.
Hey, we'll talk more about this next hour. We'll talk more about Chuck Knox, if you'd like, in the next hour. We got Jim Hastley coming up on the show at 2 o'clock. We can talk about sports gambling. The Supreme Court today essentially legalized sports gambling, allowing the states to decide what to do, and we'll talk about that. I want to tell you this, too. The Bills, the Buffalo Bills Kid Reporter Program is up and running, and if you're interested, you have until Friday to submit. Bills are looking for kid reporters age 7 to 13 to cover the upcoming season, going to training camp, going to the games, the home games, everything in between. If you think your child or a child you know has what it takes to be the kid reporter, you got to submit a video. The deadline for submissions is this Friday. Go to our website, buffalobills.com, to check it out. The 2018 Buffalo Bills Kid Reporter Program. This is the week where you got to get that done. Steve and I back in just a moment. One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health. We are coming to you from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update comes from One Bills Drive, where the Bills finished off their offseason conditioning program today. They've got another week of that left, and then they hit the OTAs 8 days away. The Bills made one roster move today. They signed fullback Zach Olsett to the active roster. Played college football at Winona State, a rookie from Winona State. Olsett was one of the invitees to the Bills' weekend rookie minicamp, a tryout player who was added to the roster today. To make room, the Bills put running back Aaron Green on the waived injured list. Over the weekend, the Bills signed another draft pick. One of their first-rounders, linebacker Tremaine Edmonds, agreed to his rookie contract. Now the Bills have just third-round pick Harrison Phillips and top pick Josh Allen, the only unsigned rookies. Former Bills head coach Chuck Knox passed away over the weekend at the age of 86. Coached the Bills, the Rams, and the Seattle Seahawks. Coached the Bills for 5 years, the Seahawks for a total of 9 years, leading them to winning records in 6 of 9 seasons. U.S. Supreme Court today struck down a federal law that prohibits sports gambling, a landmark decision that gives states the go-ahead to legalize betting on sports. The court ruled in favor of the state of New Jersey, ending a nearly 6-year legal battle and overturning a federal statute that the sports leagues had adamantly stood by for more than 20 years. Texans quarterback Deshaun Watson, recovering from a torn ACL in his right knee, is on schedule and should be ready for training camp, according to Houston coach Bill O'Brien today. Elsewhere today, the NBA playoffs, Cleveland Cavaliers got spanked last night by Boston 108-83 in Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Those two teams play again in Boston tomorrow night. Tonight, Golden State plays at Houston at 9 o'clock in Game 1 of the Western Conference Finals. And hockey tonight, it is Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals with the Vegas Golden Knights at Winnipeg. Winnipeg won Game 1 a couple of nights ago, or last night. Washington beat Tampa Bay by a score of 6-2. Capitals lead that series now 2-0. And that is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker. Yes, sir.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yep.
Also, one of the things that's, you know, about this gambling thing that came up, the NFL obviously had to put out a statement, and it is a short one, but it is this. The NFL's longstanding and unwavering commitment to protecting the integrity of our game remains absolute. Congress has long recognized the potential harms posed by sports betting to the integrity of sporting contests and the public confidence in these events. Given that history, we intend to call on Congress again, this time to enact a core regulatory framework for legalized sports betting. We also will work closely with our clubs to ensure that any state efforts that move forward in the meantime protect our fans and the integrity of our game. That from the National Football League in the wake of the Supreme Court ruling banning the government's lifting the bans on the federal government's bans on sports betting from state to state. That is going to change some things on the landscape, maybe not for a lot of people, and maybe just that for some people as well. It's interesting. People are already starting to tweet us about what it means to them, and we asked them, you know, give us your thoughts on if it's going to change, if it'll impact how you see it as a fan. And Ryan Haynes tweeted in, "It's not going to affect me as a Bills fan. We know never to bet on the Bills, for or against."
Can't depend on it.
You can't?
Yeah, give us a call. We can talk about this, too. It's significant. We're going to talk with Andrew Brandt at the bottom of the hour at 1:30, the former ESPN, now MMQB sports business expert. I think most people believe this will have some pretty significant effects on the way the game is
right
is followed, you know. What impact will legalized gambling have on the NFL and on you as a fan? We got lines open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. That statement, Steve, from the league appears to me to be the league's attempt to make sure that they don't have to deal with 50 different sports gambling programs, right? They want, what do they talk about? A federal core regulatory framework for legalized sports betting. So the league probably knows, well, they do know now that gambling is coming. They probably are wishing we really can't handle 50 different sports gambling setups in every state, right? We
right.
need one framework.
What will happen probably is, obviously the shadow that has caused the league to shy away from it is the fact that if money starts changing hands, people are going to pay players to lose or win games or to point shave. If the integrity of the game, whether who wins or loses, may be affected by behind-the-scenes money transactions and that kind of thing. Like, the integrity of the game is going to go out the window. I think you can bet that the league is going to have – the league, instead of being trying to separate themselves from it, will probably be a part of the loop so that – nothing gets by, and everybody who's betting on it, they know who's got the money, where it's going to go, how it's going to be legalized. They do it already in Nevada. There's a lot of things in place to make sure that they monitor where the money goes, and so that they're going to be able to keep the game sacrosanct, so that nobody can have doubts about the veracity of the outcomes. And that's really where the league sits on the whole thing. They could care less. If there's money to be made, certainly they want to do it. But as long as they can make sure that nothing untowards is happening to their game, that's really the thing that's at their core concern.
Well, there could be money to be made, and I think that's going to get the league's attention.
Absolutely.
You should know. I mean, this started in New Jersey. New Jersey filed this lawsuit. For years, Nevada was the only state in the union where you could have legalized sports betting, and under this law, any state could enact this. It's also interesting to me how the leagues have been different about this, Steve. The NBA and Major League Baseball changed their minds and started to lobby in favor of sports gambling in several states, Connecticut, Illinois, Indiana, Kansas, Missouri, New York, and West Virginia.
Right.
The NFL, National Hockey League, and NCAA have not done anything like that. I would think somebody is probably already presented or is about to present to the owners, hey, you say you're against it, okay, but look at how much money this might raise. Look at what this might do to your television ratings. You're worried about declining TV ratings? Well, if people are sitting there betting on everything, down the stretch here, maybe your TV ratings would remain, which is why, as you read that league statement, I can get it. The NFL's longstanding and unwavering commitment to protecting the integrity of our game remains absolute. They're not saying we're against gambling. They're saying we want to protect the integrity of the game. That's what the league is saying.
Right. And I'll tell you this, too. You can bet that the owners' meetings, this is number one, day one, agenda item number one, is going to be this new ruling and
meetings
what it means.
Next week, 2 weeks?
There's going to be that. This is going to be the absolute center conversation point for the National Football League owners' meetings coming up in a few weeks.
You know why?
It's money.
Thank
absolutely.
You. Yes, they're
going
to be
and
made.
Here's the thing. They're going to be able – and I think –
they're like sharks.
Well,
money available.
Listen, there's a lot of businessmen, and there's 32 guys that have made a ton of money in the business world. And it's going to be that if you want to – if these states want to bet on the NFL, the NFL is going to have – rights fees or whatever, integrity fees or what you call it, what you want, they're going to have a cut of the action. And let's face it, too, if they're in a state, every club here in Buffalo, you've got your one Buffalo app. I mean, they're all going to have their own app for all the types of ways you can wager on the team and how it works. And now the players' union's going to get involved, too. I was thinking about this, too. That's got to go – all this money they get off of that revenue's got to go right into the salary cap for this – it's got to go into the kitty for the players and the owners to share alike. So there's a lot of moving parts right now, and it's going to be interesting to see how the ownership handles this. I've told you this before, Murph. When the NFL handles big issues like this, and this does seem to me to be a very big issue, they usually always get it right. Sometimes it takes them forever to do that, but they do always get it right. Even with replay, I think they've kind of gotten it down to where it's right now. They're talking about how they change the rules so they can, make it discernible when you have a bang-bang play in the league. But replay has been a great addition to the sport. I think you hate it. But I think they're going to get this right, too. And I think in what bodes well for this, though, Murph, is that there are other sports leagues involved. They can look and see how's the NBA handle it, NHL handle it, how's Major League Baseball handle it, and they can all attack it with the same formula and get it right together.
Albert Breer, who writes for MMQB, very smart guy, did an examination of this a couple of weeks ago at the NFL owners' meetings in Orlando. And one of his points was, watch the NBA. The league will probably watch the NBA. The NBA apparently has determined that trying to monetize traditional betting on a point spread is a low-margin business. That's why we were talking about prop bets earlier. Betting on point spreads doesn't generate the kind of action that betting on prop bets might bet. And so the NFL will be watching the NBA. The NBA is looking for a percentage of all basketball-related bets. You can imagine the NFL will do that as well.
That's right.
The NBA looking for 1% of all basketball-related bets in the proposals they've made. I mean, that's a lot of money when you think of the money that's out there to be made, Steve. And, that's what I think will motivate those owners, the prospect of what? A new revenue source, a new revenue stream, something that may also have the effect of keeping the television ratings high, bolstering our television ratings. Where do they sign up, right? You can bet a lot of owners
absolutely.
Are looking right now. Where do I sign up for
absolutely.
This?
Absolutely. And they're gonna cut this one. You're gonna talk about something as lucrative as we all know the gaming industry is. It may not take them as long to get this one right as it did, every other issue that has faced them. They're gonna get this one right pretty quick if they can monetize it. There's no doubt about it. They'll get this thing done and done right.
Albert Breer points out it'll open up more sponsorship, too. Right now, the league, I think, is prohibited from making a sponsorship deal with any casino that has sports betting. Well, if that's gone, that's a whole
They can't have the word casino in a contract.
Yeah.
So that's – and, let's face it. For years, there was a big wall built, figuratively speaking, there's a big wall built around Vegas. No NFL could – you couldn't do business there. Now, you got a team moving there.
Yeah.
The NHL has been there. The Golden Knights may win the Stanley Cup this year.
Yeah.
The NBA has dropped their stance against that. Is now, as you said, is one of those leagues that is like, all right, let's take a look at this real seriously and see what happens. So everything's changing, and it's changing pretty fast. And I think this is one issue. I don't think the NFL can wait too long to get in the middle of. I think you got to get out ahead of this one. I think I look for the league to have thought this one through a little bit already, and we'll see the results of that at the league meetings this month.
The Supreme Court voting today to strike down the law called the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act. It's been a law since 1992. There was a research firm that did a study that found out that if the Supreme Court were to strike down the law, which they did today, 32 states will probably offer sports betting within 5 years. I think it'll be quicker than that. I really do.
5 years is a long
time. That's a long time.
Yeah. I think that's.
And I don't like it, Steve. I got to say, and this is, I know I'll be accused of being behind the times. I just think it's coming. I realize that. I acknowledge that. I just think it takes the focus off what the sport should be played for, and that's winners and losers, not who hit the longest field goal, not who hit the first field goal, not who won the coin toss. Those are sideshows. Those are circus issues. But if you open it up, prop bets, those kind of things, those will be the things that people focus on, and all of a sudden wins and losses will be less important, and I don't think that's good for the game. That's just my initial take. Yeah. Somebody talk me out of it. But
well, I don't know if I can talk you out of it, but I think you might have to learn to embrace it the way it's in its new look. I think the way that everybody ingests entertainment is so diverse now with, smartphones and surfaces and tablets and television and cable and internet television, and it's just so far-reachingly changed than what it was just 20 years ago. You got to think that this is on the next thing on the horizon, and it is going to be very different than what we have traditionally known. And I'll tell you this: you talk about it, I'll give you on a different level. I'll tell you an instance that happened here in Buffalo that changed the way the game is enjoyed in the stadium. Going back to my career, the 1990, the team hadn't been very good for a while. We'd been 12-4 in 88, and in the championship game, we were in the playoffs out in the first round in 89, so it was a pretty good team. We came out, and we caught lightning in a bottle all of a sudden, became a legendary team. Nobody knew it was legendary then, but we went through the first season of 1990 before we went to Super Bowl 25, and it was an absolutely epic run. We caught lightning in a bottle, the no-huddle offense, Jim Kelly, Thurman Thomas, Bruce, I mean, it was the highest, biggest thing in football, all right? So we go to the Super Bowl, and we lose Super Bowl. We come back the next year, and there's a lot of interest, and it's time to start renovating the stadium. They put the big screen scoreboard in the end of the stadium, and from that moment on, everything was different in the stadium on game day.
What?
The crowd watched TV in the stadium instead of looking at the field and cheering. You could tell between plays, after big plays, after certain moments throughout the game, there was a palpable difference in the crowd and what was going on in the crowd as opposed to just 12 months before the season before, because there was nothing to look at before that.
Except the game.
Except the game, except the crowd, except what's going on, except getting on the opponents or whatever. Once they put that screen in the stadium, it was a different atmosphere. It's continuing to do that even now. Now you've got suites. Now you've got you go to the M&T Bank suites up in one end. You go to the Jim Kelly, the Van Miller, all these suites and all the club levels. You go inside there and you can't even hear the crowd.
Right. You're right.
So it's changed, and this is just one more step in that. I don't know where it's going, but certainly the NFL has always been tent. The only sacred cow for the National Football League, and they can say it's the integrity of the game. I would disagree that is the tantamount consideration. The tantamount consideration for the National Football League is and always has been and always will be fan interest. They don't care what their game looks like. They don't care how many points are scored. They don't care even player safety. You know, despite the – it is about fan interest. If they can generate fan interest, they are going to do it. They are going to do it. And I think this does that. They think this will do that in another way. And it's going to change the way it's perceived, just like the scoreboard did 25 years ago.
Let's take your thoughts on this. We got phone lines open. What impact will legalized gambling have on the NFL and on you as a fan? 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550. We'll talk with NFL business expert Andrew Brandt about this live coming up in about 10 or 12 minutes. Call here from Tom in Rochester, though. Tom, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
All right, guys. You're kicking butt one more time. Hey, Steve.
Hey.
Hi, Tom.
Go ahead, Tom.
Huge Bills fan for my whole lifetime. I know you hear the whole spiel, but please say hello to my father. He's watching on television. I'm listening on the radio, making a buck out here, driving a medical cab today.
What's his name?
Coach Pasek.
Coach Pasek?
Pasek, like the word Essek with a P in the beginning. Pasek.
All right.
He coached at Penfield, Steve, for 17 years. And, we live and die with our Bills. And we watch all the games. And sometimes there's some bad words that are said, sometimes in the household. But anyhow, Steve and John, Steve, I appreciate you having your pulse on Buffalo, needless to say, on both sides and on the rink and the field. And I don't know. I just think, John, I'm with you. I remember placing a bet against – okay, I wanted my Bills to win, but I was at the stadium.
This is what I told you about.
I'm going to hate this story.
Go ahead, Tom. Go ahead.
No, I'm not going to like this story, Tom.
No, I know you're not, John. I had the Denver Broncos. This is before I believe we went to the Super Bowl. Doesn't matter. So I had the Denver Broncos plus the points. So I wanted – our Bills to win, but not by too much. And it was the weirdest feeling, and I don't enjoy it. I've been a little addictive to things in my past. I do not like this idea one little bit. That's just my one man's opinion.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
John and Steve, they're aware of the addictive nature of gambling.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's a buck. I used to be a substance abuse counselor. There's families that get torn apart because of, compulsive gamblers. I'm not talking about people, you know. So, anyhow, I don't want to get a little preachy here because there's no pulpit in front of me. But I just think that the integrity of the game doesn't need this. That's why the NFL had to come out with a statement today.
Right.
You know, and look at Pete Rose. He's never been able, there's a coach. So I don't want to take up too much time. I work in radio, so trust me, I can talk. I do a jazz.
Thanks, Tom.
At the jazz station.
All right.
So, thanks, Tom.
All right, Tom. Well, thanks for that call, and you're right. I mean, we're already getting feedback from that. And one of the things, the downside is this is the ugly underbelly. We got a tweet here from Brian Rosignol. Gambling has become the answer to every state's financial woes at the expense of its citizens and their families. This is just one step further toward the demise of society. Gambling is an addiction. And that being said, there are going to be some people that are hurt by this.
Yeah.
And it is a way for these states to rake in some cash off the citizens and off of one vice that the citizens have. And there's going to be some people and hurt by their inability to control their own gambling. And I think you can look for that as a downside of this. Absolutely, there's no question about it. And you can say, you can point to it. It's not football. It's not basketball. It's not hockey. Is it? What it is it, you know, you can say, point to society and say it's one more, down one more dark road that society's kind of headed down, and we're all kind of riding that train.
Here's a call from Buzz, who I think has a different take. Buzz, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, the thing is that as far as the dirty side of gambling, it's always been around. Like, it's just now the states are going to be in control of it. So the right. Typical government taking over for, like, my bookie's probably not real happy this is happening.
I was thinking about that. The
wise guys aren't going to like it.
The most impacted people will be the guys who now take bets on NFL football, and there are many. There's no question.
And actually, it brings me to one good thing about it, though, is my bookie will give me a line of credit, which I might not want, or maybe shouldn't have. This, at least, you'll have to pay all your money up front, so that'll give you a little bit of a safeguard. But my main point that I wanted to call in about was the NFL is actually founded because of gambling. So when it was founded in, 1920, whatever, there was already college football. And people loved to bet on college football back in those days. And on Sundays, there was nothing to bet on. So a bunch of rich people got together and formed the NFL. And that's really how the league got started. I don't know if that's really well known or not, but that's true.
I didn't know that.
I've never heard that before. I'm not disputing it, Buzz. I've never heard that. And look, and I know that early NFL owners, there were some characters, let's say. But I don't know if that really was the driving force, you're telling us?
Well, they were willing to lose money at first, to found it, just because they wanted to get their gamble on. I heard this, decades ago, and I'm pretty sure it's true. Those guys were characters, like you said.
Right. Yeah. Buzz. That's may very well be true. And I think, thanks for the call, Buzz. I appreciate it. That's interesting that. That's how it all started way back in the day, and then they moved so far away from it. I think because back in the day because the integrity of the game was so important. And Chris Pearson tweets into us along those same lines. John Murphy, he said, the majority of views who watch football plays, they play fantasy. It's changed the sport forever, and that's true. He says also wins and losses are the smallest piece of the pie. He says, yeah. Thank you, Supreme Court. And that has been a big change. I noticed it almost overnight. And I think that's why you and I both think the changes to the game and how this is going to happen are going to happen very fast. Because I'll note, one year I go, every year the networks bring their people in that are going to cover a sport. Like if it's college, in CBS, it's college football, it's the NFL, it's all of that. At Fox, it's the same thing. It's the NFL and whatever sports they have. So you have these get-togethers, and one year we come in, and out of the blue, everything was about fantasy football and the fact that fans could bet on it. Everything, online betting. All the commercials had to do with it. All of the promos had to do with it. There were special things that they bought in-game, selling and things like that. It happened almost overnight because of the prevalence of it. So I think this is going to be a fast-changing face of the NFL, and I think it's going to surprise a lot of people. But I think you can take it for what happened with fantasy a few years ago. That's how fast it's going to happen, I think, with this.
Yeah, I mean, imagine move. NFL owners get to their meetings, I don't even know where they are, in a week or two, and somebody shows them a number. This is the amount of money that we might be able to make if we can come together and cobble together a gambling scheme with some of these states this year. They're not going to want to wait. They're not going to want to leave that money on the table in 2018. They're going to want to move on it. I do think, like you, Steve, it's going to happen sooner than we anticipate. Fred calling from Central PA, Pennsylvania. Fred, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Good afternoon, John and Tasker. I think this is great for the game. Okay, I understand they're probably going to have to set up, and I think all the major leagues are going to have to do this, baseball, basketball and whatnot. They're going to have to set up a committee. They're going to have to be socially responsible when it comes to this issue because of the addictiveness. But just picture what Super Bowl Sunday is going to be like now. I mean, people are interested on the kickoff. They're going to have interest on who scores first. They're even going to have interest in the commercial. So that's going to, you know, the revenue the NFL is going to benefit from this. It's going to be unreal. And it's going to bring, okay, you have people who love the NFL, who love football and whatnot. But it's going to bring more people who just love football. It's going to bring people. This is going to be incredible. I mean, like I said, the revenue for the game is going to be through the roof because it is going to draw so much interest.
I think so, Fred. Thank you for the call. But, Steve, you're a former player. How would a former player react in the Super Bowl, let's say, if the crowd at the Super Bowl is cheering for odd things like, some of those crazy prop bets.
Listen,
as a player, how would you handle that?
I don't know that it's going to bring new people to the game. I really don't.
It'll bring new money to the game. I see.
Yeah,
that.
It's going to bring new money to the game, no question. I don't think. Certainly, it may. As the more it becomes an everyday occurrence, a part of the game, and more people hear the verbiage and the language that accompanies it. Like with the word prop bet, and they're going to understand, they're going to gain it, and they're going to start to see things. Maybe it'll gain more interest, or maybe they'll gain more interest throughout the game. But I think for the players, listen, the game is a physical game. It's intense. They pour all themselves into it. They're not going to care. They can't afford to care one way or the other. They'll appreciate the financial benefit, if there is any tangible benefit for it, for the players right away. But by the same token, yeah, I don't think it's going to change that much for how the game is. I don't know if it'll bring more people because now they can bet. I can't see that happening, but certainly the game is going to look different to people because of it. I think it's going to be – there's going to be – and for me, it's going to be commercials. The commercials are all going to be about that because that's where the money's going to be. They want you to – this sportsbook's going to want you to bet with them, not somebody else.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that's just the way it works. And that's going to be the strange thing. I don't know that the game will change much at all, except for the fact that you're right. People are going to be cheering at strange times in the stadium if they have an in-game prop bet.
Yeah.
And the club has an app that's going during the game, and stadiums are going to be absolutely – it's going to be unbelievably important for them to have good internet in the stadium now, right?
Yeah.
Right? You can bet that's going to get upgraded first thing.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Like a big deal, and we're going to talk more about it as we move through the afternoon. The Supreme Court decision today to strike down the federal law that prohibits sports gambling. We're going to talk with Andrew Brandt when we come back, weekly columnist for mmqb.si.com. He writes about the business of the NFL. This is the business of the NFL. Andrew Brandt will enlighten us when we come back. Steve Tasker, John Murphy, you're listening to One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker along with John Murphy here at One Bills Drive. It's a beautiful day out, and we are talking about the Supreme Court ruling on the gambling issue in the National Football League. We're pleased to be joined by Andrew Brandt. He's a Monday Morning Quarterback weekly columnist. He also hosts the Business of Sports podcast, and he's the director of the Morad Center for Sports Law at Villanova. Andrew Brandt, thank you for coming on with us. Steve Tasker along with John Murphy. How are you today?
Hey, Steve and John. Yeah, it's a busy day. You know, I was at those hearings on December 4th, so here we are. It took this long. And I really thought, it's hard to read tea leaves on these court cases, especially Supreme Court, but I thought there was a lot of empathy towards New Jersey, towards the state's rights here. And it turned out to be prophetic because that's what happened. I mean, they ruled for the states. It's in legal terms, it's a state law case more than a gambling case where states can do what they want with gambling, and we're going to see a free-for-all in the next several months.
It may be a state's law case. It is, as you say, a state's law case. But why is it, Andrew, Steve and I, we've been talking about this really since this. We have a feeling this is a monumental case when it comes to the National Football League. Are we right on that? What do you think?
Yeah, you know what I've been asking since December or even before that? This has been in the K courts for years. Do the NFL and other leagues, do they really want to win this case or lose this case? Because, listen, their party line is integrity, and their party line is we want a federal solution, federal, rather than a state-by-state patchwork. But regardless, the more legalized gambling, it's the better for them. And I say that because this is an incredible fan engagement tool, and they've seen it from fantasy. Fantasy really started big time in a few years ago, and the fan engagement on games they have no rooting interest in is strong. It's strong. So you can imagine where it goes with real gambling in terms of viewers watching games they have no rooting interest in.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Andrew Brandt, Monday Morning Quarterback columnist, the thing that struck me, and I spoke about it a few moments on our program, that when the fantasy leagues came in and the online betting came into the league, it really happened overnight, and it was enormous from the get-go. Do you anticipate that same kind of onslaught right from the beginning of this next season?
You know, it's just going to depend, Steve, on where this opens, where it doesn't, in terms of physical brick-and-mortar casino-style betting. I'm near New Jersey. I'm in Pennsylvania. I think it's going to happen there within weeks. I think New Jersey's got one sports book they already invested $1 million in, Monmouth Park. I would see that ready to go by the NBA Finals.
Right.
But
like you're talking about a week.
Week.
Yeah.
But these other states, they've got laws fast tracked. I would think by the NFL season, and I'm talking about states kind of on deck, like Pennsylvania, like West Virginia, like Connecticut, like New York even.
Right. Are you talking about states that have actual casinos up and running that could just, like, switch over, like, one of their banquet rooms and all of a sudden it's a sports book, correct?
Absolutely.
Right.
And what I'm saying is these are states with bills through the committees level and ready to go. I mean, all they needed was today. Now then, there's the implementation phase, which take months, but to target the NFL season is not unrealistic.
Andrew, you mentioned how, in some ways, more gambling is better from a fan engagement standpoint. Will there be, in fact, money to be made by the league, by the NFL in this case, from legalized gambling? I've seen reports of like a fee. Some call it an integrity fee paid to the league. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I just tweeted that. That phrase really just cracks me up.
I know, right?
The reason they've been opposed to gambling all these years is integrity, and that's the same word they're using today in their statement, as are the other leagues. But to call it an integrity fee, basically you're saying we don't like gambling because of the integrity issue, but if we're going to have gambling, give us money because of integrity.
Right.
I don't get it. And if I'm a state legislator, I think that's a tough ask. You're saying, well, why would we give you money? Because we don't have to buy rights to put NFL games on our book. So I just wonder how that's going to be implemented, and that's why the NFL probably is fighting this. But revenue-wise, absolutely. Absolutely, because you show them the stats I just talked about. I did a panel last month with this guy from Nielsen Research. He gave me a stat that just told me where this is going. He said the average non-betting NFL fan watches 15, 16 games a year. Sounds right, home team, et cetera.
Sure.
The average betting NFL fan, 50 games.
Whoa.
So once the NFL sees that, I'm sure they have, they know this is gold. But John, you asked the question, how? That's what they're sitting in these offices right now talking about. How? Is it integrity fee? Is it a sponsor deal? Is it going with Harrah's or Bally as an exclusive deal? Is it figuring out a way that, you know, the handheld market through Verizon comes back to them? They've got to figure that out, and I think if they don't have one already, they need people in place, like I say a CGO, chief gambling officer, because
Right.
They're all over Europe. I mean, these people that do this for a living.
Yeah, and I think you can count on the National Football League probably going for as long as they stay. And I said there's kind of this figurative wall built around Vegas for decades. I think right now the league is probably headed to Vegas trying to headhunt an executive with a gaming commission or somebody to hire and put on their payroll.
Right.
Correct?
Yes, and I also think this. They lost. Listen, I'm friends with all these people, but I can say this. They lost the high ground with Vegas. Because right. Whatever they said about gambling, when you put a team in the mecca of gambling, what are we doing here?
Right.
I mean, well, I was in Green Bay. One of our big sponsors was the United Nations Casino. Our players stayed at the United Nations Casino.
It's the only hotel in Green Bay.
Easy now.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean, though? You come in there with an NFL team, you kind of need some facilities.
Yeah, the Bills stayed there a couple times.
Yeah.
Yes.
The way CBS puts all their people there. I mean, everybody's got – I mean, it's the only place to be.
And I'm sitting there thinking, wait, it was only 4 years ago, summer of 14, that the NFL shut down a fantasy football convention with Tony Romo and many others.
Yep.
Because not because of fantasy, but because it was at a casino. Not even at there. It's like an annex to it. And then they put a team in Vegas. I mean, come on.
Yeah, they're gonna have to stop straddling that fence. And I think and that, the big question is, and I guess you kind of started in on it, Andrew. We're speaking with Andrew Brandt, Monday Morning Quarterback, weekly columnist, and also host of the Business of Sports podcast. And he is also with the Morad Center for Sports Law at Villanova. And, Andrew, I guess the big question is, how will the league monetize this decision by the courts, and will it be the same in every state? And also this, my big question is this, are the teams going to put together their own little betting app to have online live in their stadium? I mean, there's just no end to the outlets by which they can make this happen, correct?
You're asking the absolute right question, and that's what's driving them nuts in their offices right now, that it's going to be a state-by-state approach. So we're going to have states like New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, maybe New York, maybe West Virginia all in, and you're going to have states all out. There's never going to be gambling in Utah. We know that. And what's going to happen? And that's why they want the federal approach. Now, we haven't even mentioned the union. Now, I was dealing with the same issue with marijuana, and people are, including players, when it's all these legalizations happen, players calling me saying, I can light up now. And I'm like, no, because you bargained drug testing. So does this become a bargaining issue? And you better believe the players want their share. And I can picture this negotiation. The league's going to say, well, we're going to make more money overall for gambling, so it's going to go into the cap, and
sure.
You'll make more.
Sure.
And the players should say, that's not enough.
Well, here's the thing as well, Andrew, and this has always been a huge issue. What happens when you get a gaming, like they did with the casino where the league stopped a fantasy conference because it was at a casino?
Yeah.
You're going to have players being paid to show up for the Super Bowl at a sports book to be there and take money from a gaming commission or a gaming sports book just to show up, and then the integrity of the league will, you know, it becomes into question. I mean, that's all been a big no-no in the past.
Absolutely. And you asked about team by team. I mean, they're going to try, they have to get a hold of this. I'd imagine that a memo is being drafted to all the 32 clubs right now in terms of where this goes. But I think what we have to step back here. You know, I hosted an event about this about a year ago, and I wouldn't call them picketers, but I had people outside handing out anti-gambling literature. So we are moving an immoral area where the NFL is a little bit queasy, and I get it. Roger Goodell has been the conduct commissioner. He does not like any activity that can be perceived as lower than first-rate conduct. I get it. But it's like I see with my kids, we're changing. The society taboos have all changed. And it's exactly like marijuana, where this is happening. And is the NFL going to be behind it or in front of it? Because it is happening.
Andrew, I understand what you're saying, and I'm one of the queasy ones, I have to say.
Yeah.
For this reason, I don't think this will have a positive outcome on the way the game is viewed or followed or even played on some level. And, yeah, I guess I'm talking about the integrity of the game. I just think people are going to have different interests now when they watch NFL games, and maybe it will eventually lead to the ruination of the game.
Yeah, I understand that, because then I start hearing, I talked to a gambling guy this morning, and he's like, well, just wait when it's mobile and it's in-game.
Yeah,
right. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, the next touchdown pass or run, the next field goal, and think about this, the next play.
Yeah. Right, yeah, in-game prop bets are going to
be my God.
You can do it.
They're
quickly,
around the
yeah.
corner, and that's...
Now, there's the moral issue, but if I'm the NFL, I'm hearing that, and I'm like, wow. How much money we can make.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
You know, if there's 110 plays in a game, think about that. But, you know, the morality part, and it's just so interesting because what do we want out of this? This is really the two forces of the NFL right now butting heads. You've got the moral conduct commissioner, and you've got owners wanting to make every revenue. So this is where it meets the road.
Crazy. Andrew, yeah. Thanks for this. Thanks for your insight. We probably get back to you on this topic over the next weeks and months ahead. We appreciate it.
Will do.
Thank
Take
you.
Care, guys.
Andrew Brandt, weekly columnist for MMQB and The Atlantic, host of the Business of Sports podcast, director of the Morehead Center for Sports Law at Villanova. More gambling, better for the league, he says, because of fan engagement. I don't think anyone can dispute that. There will be more viewers. The ratings will be higher if people have money on the game, right? You can, and his stat was incredible about betting fans watch about, what, 15 games?
Non-betting fans.
Non-betting games, 15 or 16 games per year. In other words, you watch your home team. Betting fans watch 50, three times the amount. That's ratings. That's money in the owner's pockets. That's why stuff's going to change and maybe change quickly.
And we started talking about this in the office before. We said, we got to talk about this. And, yeah, we'll talk about it. See what it. But, you know, the more you talk about it, you're going down a wormhole that just says there's no end. I mean, this is the ramification of this. We don't know where this is going to head. It will change the way the game is perceived and the way the game is digested by the fan base. And I think in some ways, it'll spur interest. It's like the same thing that fantasy football did for the game. They had a lot of people who were really interested in not just their team, but everybody's team and all these players. And how this affects the way the NFL does business is really, really going to be important over the next few months, because they've got to get it ironed out. Because you can bet that some of these states, like Andrew Brandt, we just spoke to, he said some of these states have been out ahead of this. They've got some fast-tracked laws.
Ready to go. Jersey,
they're ready to go. Jersey's ready, probably Connecticut, probably Pennsylvania, and some others. They're ready to get this on the track and headed in the right direction. It's big, and once it happens, it's going to be everybody else is going to be in trying to get their share of that pie.
We have time to talk about this in the minutes that remain. We'll get your thoughts on it at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. The Supreme Court strikes down a law that prohibits sports gambling. What do you think about that? And our other topic of the day, can the Bills find a starter in free agency? If so, at what position? We'll recap our Twitter poll and talk about that when we return. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. I think I'm going to start gambling, Steve.
Don't do it.
We talked last week, and we could go
Stick
today
with
about
me. You're
the,
my pigeon. You can't
Kentucky
gamble with anybody
Derby.
But me.
I don't know. I'm not a moralist about this as far as gambling. I talked last week about the Derby and won a little money on the Derby, but I just don't think this is going to be good for the league, for any of these sports, quite frankly. You know, and they're all involved now.
One thing that remains to be seen is it going to happen online as well? Can New Jersey accept bets from around the country online? And if they do that, then it's going to be okay for a guy, literally any place with internet, you're going to be able to place bets on whatever game you want at any moment you want. And I think one thing, you're going to see it like we did with the marijuana industry, where it became legalized in some states, and slowly but surely the social mores about marijuana dropped and dropped and dropped. So, till now it's kind of an accepted part of our society for medicinal purposes, whatever. I think you'll see the same thing with gambling. It will become socially acceptable and much more part of our everyday lives, and it will be something that we just get used to over time, and it will be something that this next generation is going to grow up with it. They're not going to know any different.
Call from
and
Charlie.
That's just the way it's going to be.
Charlie on the West Side has a thought on this. Charlie, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello, John and Steve. Good afternoon. Condolences to Chuck Knox and his family over the weekend. One of the best coaches I think we ever had here.
I agree with you. We're going to talk with Jim Haslett about Chuck Knox coming up in about 6-7 minutes.
What I'm saying is that by gambling, allowing the gambling to be legalized, though probably in a lot of states in this country, is it can open up Pandora's box. And the biggest reason why I say that, I remember years ago when Kenny Stabler was with the Oakland Raiders, Al Davis traded him, and he went to Houston, then he played with the Saints, that he was accused. He was never found guilty, but he was accused of gambling on games. And then I guess the NFL writers did not like that about him, and they waited to him till he passed away. Then they put him in the Hall of Fame. They didn't put him in there when he was living. And it's just that these stories, that's my main concern with sports is with football, is that going to open up the door in Pandora's box with people, you know, taking money to fix games. I hope it doesn't happen, and I hope we don't read about it or hear about it on TV.
Yeah.
You have a good afternoon now.
Thanks, Charlie. And you're right. That's a good point. And that's just what we've been talking about. We had Andrew Brandt on a moment ago, Monday Morning Quarterback columnist. It may be Pandora's box, and it may take everybody down a road that's a little bit distasteful. But I think also you're going to have a lot of very sharp people working on this problem. Even if it is all about the money for them, they're going to get it right on every avenue they can possibly think of. It remains to be seen what all of this is going to look like and where it's going to take people. But there's no doubt about it. That once one state does it, and if online betting it becomes available and popular like it could, the lid's off. Every state's going to jump on board without question, because they'll all see the revenue that they could generate because of it.
His question, though, about suspicion about players, yeah, I mean, that would
– absolutely.
It's going to be greater than
problem.
It is now. It's a problem now. It'll be even bigger if everybody's, you know, betting on every game.
It's a problem they've got to be – apply their brains to and get, you know, laws behind it, rules behind it, codes of conduct behind it. You call it what you want. They've got to get core parameters in place so that they can guard against money being siphoned to the wrong people for the wrong reasons, mainly the integrity of the sport. So they'll attack that just like they do everything else, and they'll try and get that right as well. But they'll probably have some hits and misses on the way there.
You want to read some of this from the
tweet sheet? Yeah, absolutely.
What do you got there?
Steph, go Bills. Going back to betting, I knew a guy. Oh, I don't want to read these without ever read them before. I don't want to make sure I don't.
Well, I'm producer as approve these. Steve.
Okay, going back to betting, I knew a guy who bet for the Bills back during the Super Bowl era, but never bet on the big game. Bought his mom a new car. He says, I'm with Murphy, though. What's wrong with just playing the game? It's not all about just highlights. Yeah, I mean, no doubt, there's been people on both ends of the spectrum who have been – listen, I was a part of the team that went all those Super Bowls. I remember, and I've been – for once a month for the last 30 years, I've been congratulated on running Leon Letdown in Super Bowl 28. I was on the field, and I was chasing him, but Don Beebe's the guy who caught him. But Beebs will tell you, after he made that play, certainly it was one of the iconic plays in all of NFL history – because in a lost effort, Don Beebe wouldn't give up, and he knocked a ball out of Leon Lett's hands before he got in the end zone. It turned into a touchdown, and the Buffalo Bills kept the ball. But because of all the prop bets in the Super Bowl, millions of dollars did or did not change hands because of the point spread and the numbers at the last digits and all the pools. All of that changed because of Don Beebe's unwillingness to give up. To this, you know, he got thousands of letters, both positive and negative, because of the gambling that was involved with that point spread. It was prevalent then. It's going to be prevalent, even more prevalent now.
People suggesting that he not run down Leon Lett?
Oh, criticizing him. Say, listen, it was a lost cause. You stink. because, you know, and then he also had a guy, I mean, he got a gift in the thing. A guy started his own business and gave him one of the products. It was a golf business. He gave him one of the clubs that he
that he won the money from BB.
He won it because of Don's effort. He won enough money to begin his own business. And as a thank you, sent Don one of the clubs that he made from his golf business, said, thank you for not giving up. Because of that, I won all this money.
There's more of that to come.
Yeah.
Once this goes in
it's
place.
Limitless.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Limitless.
We'll talk more about this in the third and final hour of the show. We also want to spend a little time talking about the late Chuck Knox, a former Bills head coach, Rams head coach, Seattle head coach, who passed away over the weekend. We're going to talk with Jim Haslett, former Bills linebacker who played for Chuck Knox, drafted by Chuck Knox. He's coming up next on the show. Come on back for that. One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health, and we are from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network, sports update.
Update from One Bills Drive. Big news from Washington, D.C. today. The Supreme Court struck down a federal law that prohibits sports gambling, a landmark decision that now gives states the go-ahead to legalize gambling, legal gambling on sports. States that want to offer legal sports may now do so. New Jersey plans on being the first. It's the end of a six-year battle in the courts, overturned a federal statute that the sports leagues had adamantly stood by for more than 20 years. Here at One Bills Drive, another day on the field as the Bills' off-season conditioning program continues. One roster move today. The Bills signed fullback Zach Olstead to the roster, signed into a contract. He was made a good impression during the weekend rookie minicamp. He was a tryout player at the rookie minicamp. Now he's on the roster as a fullback. Played his college football at Winona State, 5'11", 245 pounds. Olstead lined up at fullback during minicamp. The only other fullback on Buffalo's roster is veteran Pat DeMarco. To make room, the Bills put running back Aaron Green on the waived injured list. Over the weekend, one of Buffalo's first-round picks signed his contract. Tremaine Edmonds agreed to terms. The Bills now with two first-round picks, or two other draft picks still unsigned, first-rounder quarterback Josh Allen and third-round pick Harrison Phillips. Former Rams, Seahawks, and Buffalo Bills head coach Chuck Knox passed away over the weekend at the age of 86. We'll talk about him with one of his former Bills players, Jim Haslett, in just a moment or two here on the show. NBA last night, the Cleveland Cavaliers suffered a tough loss, 108-83, game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. That series resumes tomorrow night, Cleveland at Boston for game two. And tonight, it is game one of the Western Conference Finals, Golden State opening up at Houston for that game. Stanley Cup hockey last night, Washington took a 2-0 edge over Tampa Bay with a 6-2 win over the Lightning in Tampa Bay. Tonight, it is game two of the Las Vegas-Winnipeg series. Jets lead that series 1-0. They'll face off at 8 o'clock tonight in Winnipeg. Tampa Bay and Washington play again on Tuesday night. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Steve Tasker in our One Buffalo studio, and joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a longtime friend, currently the linebackers coach for the Cincinnati Bengals. Bill's second-round pick out of Indiana, Pennsylvania in 1979, and he played 7 years with the Bills under Chuck Knox for most of that. We're happy to have Jim Haslett on the line with us. Jim, John Murphy and your former teammate Steve Tasker in Buffalo, thanks for joining us here today.
Murph, Steve, how you guys doing?
Doing great. How you feeling?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm just got off the field with some of the young guys, and it's kind of stressful sometimes, but it's actually fun. So everything's good.
Hey, Jim, Steve tells a story. We want to talk to you about Chuck Knox, but Steve tells a story that you and he were teammates for a brief while in 1986, and you actually greeted him in the locker room. Steve, tell him that story, the locker room, your first game with the Bills.
We were walking in. It was Marv Levy's first game, and I was walking in the locker room with John Kidd. And you walked in with us. You were on IR because you had broken your ankle in the preseason there in Chicago, and we're still on IR. And after I started to get dressed, you came over and told me that you had almost not let me in the locker room because you thought I was a ball boy or just some kid, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? I think I remember that.
Yeah, well, he's walking by, and I said, hey, why don't you grab me a towel? And I'm like, shoot, I said, I'm sorry about that. You know, that was a big mistake there.
Well, not a real big mistake. It's kind of understandable, but, yeah, that's the first time I met you, and you went on and you were head coach in the league, and that, you know, and you've seen a lot in the National Football League. You've been a coach for a long time, even all the way back when you first started Talk a little bit about your time as a Buffalo Bill here under Chuck Knox and some of the things you learned from him and you took into your coaching career.
Well, first of all, I think Chuck was one of the best coaches ever in the NFL. You know, he's up there with the most wins of everybody in the NFL. And he's turned around three franchises. He had a thing about him, a mystique about him, that when you were a player that you didn't fear him, but you were a little nervous about the guy. He had a great reputation. You know, John Tuck, we knew he was going to run the ball. We knew he was going to play great defense. So all those things, you know, added up that, you know, he was awesome to play for. He was great with the players. He had a great understanding of football and the offensive line. You know, he coached that for a long time. So, you know, I love the guy. I thought he was one of the best coaches ever that I ever worked for. And I worked with some pretty good coaches. He was great. And he's a great person, too. Great family. His wife's awesome. And, you know, it doesn't get much better than Coach Knox.
Hey, Jim, when you had him here in Buffalo, as you said, he spent much of his time coaching offensive line before he went to the Rams and then here to Buffalo. Did he deal with you guys on defense much? Did he just leave that up to Tom Catlin at the time? Or how did he handle the defense?
You know, he was involved in everything. He was involved in special teams. He was involved in offense and defense. Obviously, his forte was offensive line. But, you know, he had great coaches on defense. And he understood. And he knew exactly what he wanted from your football team. He wanted to run the football, play great defense, field position, get turnovers. And if you look at his over his career, all the three franchises he turned around, he had great running backs, he had a great offensive line, and they all had really good defenses. So, and you know what? There's still the attitude to winning nowadays. If you want to win in this league now, you got to be able to run the ball, you have to play defense. All those things still hold up.
Yeah, Jim, I was going to talk to you a little bit about that. That's the thing that really struck me about Chuck Knox and his career. It's rare for a guy who is successful at one team to – he may get another shot at one other team, but it's rare to get three different shots at three different franchises and take them all, really, for the Buffalo Bills and the Seahawks. Those teams hadn't been good at all before they arrived, and he took them to heights they'd never seen before. Did it with three franchises, Rams, Bills, and the Seahawks. Talk about how difficult that is and what that says about his coaching ability.
Well, one, you have to have personnel people, and he did that. He had Norm Pollum as his personnel director with very good scouts, and he did a good job of drafting. Obviously, the one year I got drafted, we had a first-round pick didn't even come, who went to Canada.
Kuzina.
And then we had, Tom, and then you had Jerry Butler, first-round pick, a great football player. You had myself and Freddie in the second round. And then you look at all the other draft picks, the thirds, the fourth, the fifth. Every single one of those guys, down to Kenny Johnson, helped that team turn it around. So we had great draft picks. He knew what he wanted. He knew what he wanted in draft picks. He wanted tough guys, kind of like the image of himself. And if you look at his career, you know, going to Seattle, going back to the Rams, I mean, you could see the blueprint for success the whole way.
Jimmy, as you said, they drafted well with Pollum making a lot of the picks, but he also brought in guys from the Rams that, you know, your buddy Butch Robertson and some other guys. He wasn't afraid to bring in veterans that he knew and trusted to run things the way he wanted to run, right? He was big on that.
No, yeah, and he was good. You know why? Because we had a great mix of veterans and young guys. You know, in my rookie year, I started, Freddie Smirlis started, but then you had the older veterans that kind of led the way that they showed everybody how to practice and how to – you know, how it worked on game day. So, you know, he brought Phil Villanueva in to be a backup that did a nice job. So, and you look at the Jerry Butlers and the Joe Cribbs of the world, and then you think about the time when, you know, the Bruce Smiths and, you know, all those type of guys that Norm brought in. I mean, he brought in a lot of good football players.
Talking with Jim Haslett, former Buffalo Bill, former head coach of the New Orleans Saints, and now the linebackers coach in the Cincinnati Bengals, about his former coach and former NFL great, Coach Chuck Knox, who passed away this past weekend. Jim, a little bit, you've been a coach now for way longer than you even played. And you said it, I mean, you still think it's a run first, play defense first kind of league. And yet, you know, the league has evolved so much over the course of your career, your playing career as well as coaching career, where do you think the league is headed now? Do you still think it's about run and stop the run, or is it about getting after the passer and getting turnovers?
Well, it's still, you know, turnovers are always going to win games no matter what. It doesn't make a difference what people are doing. You know, the offenses have evolved more to throwing the ball and more 3-4 wideouts, but the teams are constantly winning. Always have the same blueprint. They're going to run the ball, whether it's either two backs, one back, and they're going to play really good defense. That's how Philadelphia won. You know, that's how the teams have won. That's how Dallas turned it around a couple of years ago. You know, so whether it's a different brand a little bit. It's less two back, more one back. But ultimately, it all comes back to the same thing. Football's football. You got 11 guys on the field. There's only so many things you could do with 11. And over all those years, everybody's tried everything.
Hey Jim, one of the signature wins of Chuck Knox's era here was, you know, that great 1980 season when the Bills won the division title and the overtime win against the Rams that resulted in the chorus line outside the locker room well after the game had ended. What do you recall about that game and about how Chuck handled that game? You got, I think, a Mickemeyer kick won it, right?
Yeah, it was a great game. You know, the thing I remember the most was dancing out. It was freezing. We were in the locker room. We were back out on the field. Everybody was dancing around, and I remember sitting there thinking, geez, all this for a win? I mean, but then you look back at the history, and you see how many years, you know, it took to get to that part, and that was a great time in Buffalo Bills history, and then obviously the, you know, that 80s and early 90s was, you know, great football, and you know, I can see some of the things Buffalo's doing now, turning things around. You know, you have to have a big arm quarterback to win up in that area. You know, Joe Ferguson had a big arm. Jim Kelly had a big arm. The guy they just drafted has a big arm. You know, so to see some of the good things that's going on there now.
You've been a head coach, Jim. Do you believe in changing culture? Did Chuck Knox do that for the Bills? Can you do that?
Oh yeah, you can. I did the same thing when I went to New Orleans.
Yeah.
You know, they were 3-13 for 3 years in a row. We went down there, we changed it. We were upbeat, positive. We were going to do things the way we wanted. We were going to run the ball. We had Ricky Williams. We played good defense. Turned things around that way. We took a team that was 3-13, I said, for 3 years, and we won 11. And, you know, won the first playoff game ever. So, yeah, you can change cultures. I think that's what I said. I think Chuck changed the culture. I do think that you're changing the culture now up there in Buffalo. And I do think that's a big part of turning things around.
One of the things that about changing cultures is you bring new players in, but you as the linebacker coach for the Cincinnati Bengals, you got a new player, Preston Brown, that Buffalo Bills fans are pretty familiar with. What can you tell us about him?
Yeah, my short time with him, I love the guy. The guy's, you know, he's the kind of guy you want on your team. He's a really good leader. He's a big body. He's more nimble, faster, and athletic than you think for a big guy. You know, when you watch him on film, he's large, so he eats up a lot of space. So I love the guy. I think he's really smart. I love him being in meetings. He's good for our football team. And I looked at our linebackers the other day, and I said, well, here's 260. Vontaze Burfict, 260. Nick Vigil's our fast guy. He's 238. I said, oh, that's how they're supposed to be built. You know, so it's a nice group. I like working with them. Smart guys. They understand football. And, you know, I think he's a great addition to our football team.
And as Steve mentioned, you're a lifetime coach now, Jim, when you think about it. And you've done pretty much everything.
Yeah.
Coordinator, head coach, now linebackers coach. Well, last question for me. How much of your career do you attribute to what you learned, what you saw from Chuck Knox?
Well, there's a lot. You know, when I got into the coaching part of it, you know, I've been in coaching right after I got done playing. So I jumped right into it. I knew if I was ever a head coach, I was going to try to build my team the way Chuck Knox built his team. It, you know, have good personnel, pick the right guys, have tough guys on your team, guys that love football, you know, run the football, play good defense. And I kind of had the same blueprint, you know. Nowadays, everybody's got a different way to do it, but I still think that's the best way to win championships. And I think Chuck Knox was there on the doorstep. I don't know how many times. You never could get over but he turned around a lot of franchises and did a lot of great things.
Haz, thanks for coming on. We appreciate you coming on One Bills Live. Good luck this season in Cincinnati, and we wish you all the
best.
Thanks, Jim.
Yeah, we'll see you. I think we got you in preseason again, right?
Yeah, we'll see
August 24. Yeah, Sunday afternoon in Orchard Park. We'll see you then.
All right. Take care. Good seeing you.
Thanks. Right. Jim Haslett, former Bills second-round draft pick, 7 years with the Bills, 1 year with the Jets, former head coach of the Saints, and actually interim head coach for the St. Louis Rams, and obviously influenced by Chuck Knox. He had a lot of good memories there. Jim joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. By the time you got here, Chuck Knox was gone, Steve, but there were several players and a lot of staffers who remember Chuck Knox, right?
Yeah, there had been two head coaches between Chuck and Marv Levy. Marv Levy, his first game was my first game. And, yeah, a lot of people who held Chuck Knox up as that standard. A lot of the veteran players who knew what a good football coach looked like, what he sounded like, and what the team and cultures felt like in the locker room. And he was their standard. And then that slowly moved over to where Marv Levy became the standard under my time here in Buffalo. But good football coaches are good football coaches, and they affect a lot of young guys that are on their teams. And like you just saw, Jim Haslett, who is a guy like me in his mid to late 50s, who still think about what they learned from the guy.
I thought Jim was a good coach. I thought he was a good head coach, and he's right about changing around the New Orleans Saints. Three win seasons, three straight times, and then he wins 11 games. And then, obviously it was a tragedy, much more than a football problem, but Hurricane Katrina forced the Saints out of New Orleans. They had to play half their season in, Baton Rouge, and half their season in San Antonio. The Bills actually played there in 2005. And they didn't win. They were displaced. They didn't win, and things kind of fell apart. I think had that not happened, obviously there were bigger things, more significant things happening as a result of Katrina. But it certainly, I think, upended Jim Haslett's success anyway as a head coach in the league.
Kind of got sabotaged by things outside of football that conspired to make it hard for any team to win, much like it happened in Cleveland when the Cleveland Browns announced they were leaving Cleveland with eight games left in that season and they couldn't win another game. I mean, it's just the light – things come down where the football guys in the room can't affect, and they're just – I think he was a victim of that with Hurricane Katrina, and what it did to that franchise and that city, and how difficult it was to think about football during that time.
Good to hear from Jim. Good to talk to him. We'll see him, as we said, August 24th. All right, we're talking about gambling. We're talking about the Bills roster. Got a couple of different issues on the table, and you're welcome to join us. Phone lines open, 803-0550, and toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. What do you think? Can the Bills still find a starter in free agency this offseason? A lot of you think they can't get a wide receiver. Let's talk about that. The other issue, the Supreme Court ruling that outlaws the law that prevents legalized gambling in the NFL and all sports. What do you think of that? We're going to talk with you about that on the phone lines or on Twitter. Legalized gambling, what impact would it have on the NFL and how would it impact you? Let's talk about it. We'll take a break and come back with more. It is One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker along with John Murphy. We've been speaking with Jim Haslett, former Buffalo Bill, former head coach in the league, about his relationship and the things he learned from Chuck Knox, former Buffalo Bills head coach who passed away over the weekend. We also had Andrew Brandt on earlier in the show talking about the Supreme Court ruling that lifted the ban on sports betting and how that's going to affect the National Football League. Everybody think this is really the big story in the NFL right now and how they're going to handle this, because it may affect the finances of professional sports, which is, let's face it, that's priority one for all these guys. So we've been talking about that at length.
We got a few calls on that, too.
We'll get to the calls in a minute, but we're going to take a breath because we need to. After the Jim Haslett call and after we spent really an hour and a half talking about what that it could mean for the sports betting industry and what it's going to change in the NFL. But something happened yesterday in the NBA playoffs that really were pretty amazing. In a post-game press conference, LeBron James, after a devastating loss to the Celtics embarrassed LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers yesterday in Game 1 of the NBA Eastern Conference Finals. And during the post-game press conference, a reporter asked LeBron James about the run the Celtics went on in the fourth quarter. And the question was, you know, what happened on the run in that fourth quarter for the Celtics? And LeBron James, unlike any answer I've ever heard in a post-game press conference, answered like this.
We ran him the first possession. We ran him down all the way to 2 on the shot clock. Marcus Morris missed a jump shot, followed it up. They got a dunk. We came back down. We ran a set for Jordan Clarkson, and he came off and missed it. They rebounded it, and we came back on the defensive end, and we got a stop. They took it out on the sideline. Jason Tatum took the ball out, threw it to Marcus Smart in the short corner. He made a three. We come back down, miss another shot, and then Tatum came down and went 94 feet, did a Euro step, and made a right-hand layup timeout.
And for those of you watching on MSG, and you hear the media reaction, and those of you watching on television, the simulcast with MSG, he called it play by play exactly like it happened, and like an hour after it happened. He called everybody who touched the ball, every shot that was made, the out of bounds on the side, the shot clock, play by play from memory.
Yeah, it's great.
That's unbelievable. You tell me that. I have never witnessed anything like that.
We're talking about this. I told you, you've been to golf tournaments. You go to like a PGA tournament, and the players after the tournament, after their round is over, go in the media tent, and very often they'll be asked to take, you know, by the media, take us through your round, and they will talk about every shot. And we're talking about, you know, 65, 75 shots. I hit a 3-iron from 280 yards. It kind of went a little right, and then I chipped up, got within 6 feet, and then I drained that putt. Then I went to number four. I mean, they can do that. That's the closest thing that I've ever seen or heard to what LeBron did yesterday.
I've never seen anybody in a sport outside of golf be able to do that. And in golf, you know, it would be a little easier because you can go back and you picture where you were on the hole and all that. Yeah. The court, all this stuff took place after 100 up and down of the courts, right? And he picked out 5 of them and called it, not only called him what happened on it, but who touched it and what the set they had on.
Offense
and defense. And who, and the guy that went 94 feet. It was really an amazing moment. And I think you saw the media kind of chuckled about it. And some of them gave him a little smattering of applause because that was money. I couldn't believe it. That was really impressive. And that, to me, and there's all this stuff going around about it. Michael Jordan's the best player that ever played and all that. And LeBron, without question, has gotten himself into the place where he comes a part of that conversation. Absolutely. He's now the guy that is compared with Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Even if he's not as good as Michael Jordan, I'm not here to debate whether he is or not. But I'll tell you what, when you talk about the legend of LeBron James, and he is a legendary player, that goes in the pot.
Yeah. I tell you, I go into like football locker rooms, Bills locker rooms, and if you can find a guy who can answer like that, those guys are gold. If you can find like a quarterback, and I'll ask you a question like, tell me what you saw on that third down play. And they'll tell you what they saw, what they were supposed to look for, what they saw and how it differed from what they had hoped to see. Those guys, those are gold answers, I think. Just to kind of bring home to fans what happened and why it happened. It's one thing to go in there and say, why'd you throw the interception? I don't care about that question. I want to know, what did you see before that pass left your hand? What did you hope to see, and what did you see?
What were your expectations?
Yeah.
And that's the key thing, and that's what happens on those plays. You get these guys, and to a certain extent, I've been, you know, I can do it, you know, about things that happened to me on the play because you understand how you got to that point.
Right.
You understand the preamble, the game planning, what you expected from them, and then how it turned out and how it was unexpected because it's a surprise. But you can picture it all in your mind. But that little diatribe, LeBron James, he listened, and he went right to the timeout. Yeah. And there was no warning.
Right.
I mean, that just popped out. And then our guys, it was funny because on, you know, everybody now on Twitter and the social media world in which we lived, he said that, and it sounded great. All right, I'll give it. It sounded like, wow, that was really – but you know how people are in the media. Everybody's looking to really stab him in the back. Say, oh, you called this. That's not what happened. Here's what really happened. You were just talking. So they go back and they put the video with what he said, and it was exact.
Yeah.
He got him. They tried to come back and get him saying, oh, he said this, but that's not what happened. It was what happened. And we showed it when we, for our viewers on MSG, they saw that he was like verbatim play by playing it. It was like he was watching it. And they go back and fact check him, and he had his facts right. I mean, money.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Only a couple guys ever
that
like
that. That is awesome.
Only a couple guys like that. I mean, I think of Gretzky, right? And they used to say what he would see.
Oh, yeah.
And he's one of them. A couple of football guys are like that. That was impressive.
Thurman was like the running back I played with, Thurman Thomas, Hall of Fame running back. We'd come back, and Kent Hall used to come back, and I remember him talking about Thurman. Thurman knew who was supposed to block who in the front, even on a running play and pass protection and stuff, and he was great because Thurman was a very willing protector as well. He wasn't a prima donna at all. He welcomed his responsibility as a pass protector for his quarterback, Jim Kelly. And I remember Kent Hall looking at me, and he's kind of nodding his head, and raised his eyes like he's saying fact, you know. He goes, I'll tell you what, Thurman runs, he knows who misses a block up front. He'll call, even if it's on the backside, he'll go back and say, hey, you got to cut that guy off back there. Even though it was out of his he could feel it. You know, he would know the assignments of the five guys in front of him. He'd be able to call out who missed it and who got it right by where he got hit and who tackled him. And, you know, so there are guys that are on that level. But to see LeBron James in that game one, and it was an embarrassing game.
Yeah, I tried to watch it. I'm ready to plug into the NBA finally, and it was the worst game of the playoffs probably.
I'll try
tonight.
Yeah, I'll give it a try in the Western Conference tonight with Houston and the Warriors. That should be a wonderful game. But I watched a little bit of the hockey last night too, and you kind of think if a hockey player is there, a hockey player, and then you say Gretzky could have done that, and they can tell, you know, who they saw, what they saw, and what they heard. Those guys like LeBron, like a Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, and you know those guys I talked about, Jim and Thurman, Thomas, the Hall of Famers. They are different upstairs. It's not so much, although it is a huge component. It's not their physical gifts, which are abundant with all of those Hall of Famers, but it's also their intelligence and their awareness of what's going on around them. And you throw in the fact that they work harder than anybody else. That mixture comes out and sometimes in really surprising ways. And that LeBron James take that we just showed really, I think, was a shock for a lot of people.
Yeah. Got a lot on the table today. We can talk about that. We can talk about Chuck Knox passing away over the weekend. We can talk about this Buffalo Bills roster and whether or not they still get some help from the free agent market, a starter maybe. And we can talk about gambling, sports gambling. It's up to you. We'll take a few phone calls here. Gary calling from Cheektowaga. Hi, Gary. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, fellas. I'm real saddened about the passing of Chuck Knox. He was like the first I was about 10 years old when the Bills got good in the 80s. So that was like the first time we really got excited about him. And I remember the night that the Bills let him go, and that's the first time I remember, John, you on the radio. You filled in for Stan Barrett, I'm pretty sure. BN, and you were so upset going on and on about how the Bills would rue the day they let Chuck Knox go. And you were right for a few years.
They were bad for a couple of years. And Kay, you know, took over Kay Stevenson, and I think, what were they, 8-8 in his first year, and then the bottom just dropped out after that, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, they were back-to-back 2-14, 84 and 85, and that was the dark days.
Right before they picked up Steve Tasker in 2-14 was forgotten.
Yeah, okay.
You didn't deal with those 2-14 seasons.
See, I did not.
They did not win on the road for those 2 years, not one road victory.
Well, think about that. That's interesting because there's been some stretches like that. We just came off the drought.
Yeah.
And before that, before Chuck Knox got there, they were struggling, and they went 0 for the 70s against the Dolphins. First thing he did, you know, that first year, they beat the Dolphins in 1980. So streaks are pretty nice when you break them, those negative streaks. And I think the Bills have been through that all too many times, actually.
You know, question. The part that I tried to get Haslett to talk about, and he did, was culture change because Sean McDermott's trying to effectuate that here right now. Marv did it. Obviously, you can speak about that. But Chuck Knox did it, and he really turned around a culture of losing and of, you know, settling for not even second best. Second best would have been an improvement. And he did it in an interesting way, I think, by getting good drafts from Norm Pollum. He brought Norm Pollum with him, but also by bringing in, importing some of that culture, you know, some of those veterans he brought in from the Rams. It was an interesting way to build a team, and I thought, I remember back thinking then, and I was a young man at the time, but thinking, this guy's interesting. This guy's for real. We knew Chuck Knox was for real when Ralph Wilson hired him, but he proved pretty quickly that he was.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, that it was a different league back then. No free agency, no – you know, you rarely ever traded for veteran players. And these players just didn't move around. When you got drafted by a team, that's where you were going to spend your whole career until you were all used up. And so it was difficult to bring in guys who you trusted or that still had something left in the tank that you could contribute to your team. And obviously, it was done in a different way than it is today. And a guy like Chuck Knox had gotten that knowledge and the ability and you know, the philosophy that he implemented here that was really successful, not only here, but the Rams before and the Seahawks after.
Yeah.
Now, the Seahawks, you know, they were an expansion franchise, and they, you know, it was really tough to win games in 75 when the Seahawks got into the league and got to pick no veteran players from other teams. It was all just off-street free agents. Man, what a horror show that was. And Chuck Knox came in and changed all that as well.
Call here from Mike in North Tonawanda. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. It's good to be back talking to you. Thanks for the news about Chuck Knox.
Sure.
Fantastic coach for the Bills. Ton of respect for him. Gentlemen, I also wanted to talk about Haz. I got to know him through Hojo and Randy Ribbick.
Yeah.
Okay. Steve, again, all the love and respect in the world. My life won't be complete till I get to shake your hand. your nickname, I'm surprised nobody said decided to call you Taz. By the way, you covered kicks and lit nose guards up in the NFL on that wham block. Love you guys. Thanks for the good coverage.
Thanks, Mike.
Quickly, last thing about Haz. Him and Freddie Smirlis had a call-in show in the 80s. And we were in the middle of 2-14 back-to-back seasons. And I called the guys and said to Fred and Jim, guys, come on, let's go out for a beer and some wings, and I'll pay. And Freddie goes, Mike, not only will we go, I'll pay.
Wow.
That's when Fred was getting in trouble in training camp for throwing his used chicken wing bones in his closet. In his training camp room. I met so many good Bills. Lucius Sanford, Tony Green, Braxton.
Yeah.
It's a good group back then.
It's a trip down memory lane, Mike.
I was a co-host of that show, Smirlis and Haslett, every Monday night. We'd have Chuck Knox show 7 to 8, and then Freddie and Jim would come in and tear the place up 8 to 9.
You were here when I got here in 86, and Freddie was here, and so was Has. So
you know those two.
We've been acquainted for over 30 years, and we've been friends for almost that long. So, those guys, and I am friends with Freddie Smirlis. I know Freddie pretty well because we played together for a couple of years, so it was a long time before Marv Lee, you know, because Marv was a completely different coach than Chuck Knox, but also wanted to change the culture, and the league was changing very fast around because the money exploded right around the mid to late 80s. And that's when the dynamics in the locker room started to change and it became a different league. And the team went through a lot of growing pains then and finally, you know, kind of broke through that barrier and got to this playoffs consistently and went to the Super Bowl a bunch. So, Freddie was a part of that early transition with Marv and Haz, although Haz was on the team when I got here. He was gone the next year.
Yeah.
Is gone the next year.
Devastating broken leg.
Yeah, that broken leg.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about gambling. We can talk about finding a starter in free agency, too. But the Supreme Court today struck down the federal law that prohibited sports gambling. We got some tweets on this. This is a funny one from Mark Seymour. He says, hey, John, when Norwood missed the kick, I ended up winning $5,000 on a square. Talk about conflicted. I still would have wanted the kick to be good. That's kind of what I'm talking about. That kind of
thing
will happen.
If
there's money on every kick, on every play, you're going to be up there thinking, well, gee, the Bills lost, but I won, you know, $300 because so-and-so got a sack when I called it the right way. That's a problem, I think. I don't think that's a good development.
That's exactly the scenario I was trying to articulate early in the show. You're going to have people doing it just so they don't have to, you know, so they get a win-win no matter what happens. And Chris Pearson tweets this in John for John. The majority of viewers who watch football plays fantasy football, and it changed sports forever. Wins and losses are the smallest piece of the pie. He says, thank you, Supreme Court. This guy thinks it's a
loves
great
it.
Thing. He loves it.
Did fantasy football change sports forever? Didn't for
I'll
me.
Tell you what. When
it did
it,
not for me.
It wasn't a big thing when I first started with CBS 20 years ago, but it became big very quickly, and it exploded overnight. And, yeah, then they started having segments on pregame shows about fantasy and all that. Then they had websites. Then you've got all this stuff going on. So, yeah, there's no question that it's become a big part of the game and how people perceive it. And we've said it already on the program. You know, people who have some skin in the game financially, they'll watch 50 games a season rather than just their home team and watch 16 games. They watch 50. And that has changed the way the league views that stuff. And they're going to make every attempt, given, you know, the climate around the business world, they're going to try and monetize it. And that comes down to the ruling today by the Supreme Court and the gaming commissions and all of that.
A couple of calls on this issue. Jim calling from Lakeview. Hi, Jim. Go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Yeah, hi. I want to weigh in on that gambling thing. I disagree with most of the objections. You know, I lived in Las Vegas for 25 years. Of course, they had the legal sports gambling there. That never changed in any way, shape, or form how I viewed or rooted for the Bills. I mean, I'm a Bills fanatic like a lot of people. Gambling itself doesn't change how you root and how you view your favorite team. But what it does really, and I think your guests have talked about this before, is that, you know, if you got a Thursday night game and it's the Colts against Tampa Bay and you could care less, it does create some interest, which otherwise wouldn't be there.
Jim, would you ever bet against the Bills? Have you done that?
Never. Never. Hmm. I bet on them, but I have never bet against them.
Not even like
there
for,
you go.
Not even for, you know, small things like point spreads or, you know.
No, I mean, it's basically all about point spreads. I would never. I mean, I'm there as passionate, you know, a Bills fan as there is. I'm not going to bet against them. And it never affected the way I would view a Bills game at all. You know, I generally didn't even think about, I rarely bet on them because I didn't really need a gambling interest to be, you know, extremely interested in the game.
Gotcha.
And I think that's true of most fans, even with gambling legal, if they have their favorite team. It's just the other teams that, you know, the gambling comes at, the teams you don't really care about, but create some interest for you.
I got you.
Jim, that's a really good call, and I really appreciate it. But I think you're too normal and well-adjusted to be calling in the show. You're not a crackpot like Murph and I.
You got to have a sane voice on the radio every once in a while.
Yeah,
right.
My other big objection is the integrity thing, which is a joke. Every single gambling scandal that has happened where games have been fixed, it's been the legal sports books in Las Vegas that have exposed that and cleaned that up. And, of course, for a good reason. They're the ones who get victimized.
Right.
Right.
So correct. They've been, you know, they've been the ones that have, you know, made the gambling thing much cleaner and fixing games virtually impossible. The other thing is too is, let's not joke. There's a lot of illegal gambling. It's done through bookies, and you know the biggest problem with bookies is, you know, they extend credit. You get on the phone and you say, "I want to bet this." So you're basically betting money. You can bet money that you don't have. When you have legal gambling, you have to put your money down up front. They're not extending credit.
Yeah.
And that keeps people from getting in way over their heads.
Yeah, and I'll tell you that, Jimmy, it's a good point because you talk about all the things that go on in Vegas. Jim, thanks for the call. The people that you'll run up against, it will make it the integrity of the game a little bit easier to monitor because the legal betting – those legal betting outlets will open their books to the government. They say, listen, here's what we're doing and here's why and here's where all the money is. So they're not going to be able to hide funds to funnel into some illicit activity of trying to shave points or whatever. You got a guy who's taking money to tank or whatever like that. You're going to have some people who are going to be monitored, and they're going to be monitoring each other because they have too much at stake for it to be something below board. I mean, they're going to be fighting each other and the industry to make sure that it stays above board. And that's,
you have an awful lot of faith in your government, don't you?
Yeah, I guess I do. I guess I do.
You have an awful
and
lot
you know
of faith.
I do have a lot of. Listen, I'll tell you that I don't want to get into that. Yes, I do.
I can tell. Call here from Curtis in Niagara Falls. Hello, Curtis. Welcome to the show.
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing?
Okay,
good.
You know, I'll tell the screener. Like, first, I'm not a fantasy football guy. I enjoy the sport just to watch the sport. And like, if I have to, like, I'll take a day off so I can sit up late so I can watch as many football games as I can. I don't need fantasy football to enhance my viewing pleasure. I just love the sport. But like, I was telling the screener, and fantasy football has affected the game. Like you're saying, Steve, they even have segments on a pregame show about fantasy football. And I'm like, are you kidding me? But that being said, 2 years ago, when they announced that the Raiders were moving to L.A., I said to myself, what could possibly go wrong with that? Because every year, there's always like a story where a player falls upon hard times. Like, for example, was it 2-3 years ago with Kevin Williams and Art Fleister back in the day?
Right.
And what could possibly go wrong? Because what if that perfect confluence of events happened to a Raiders player? And they're right there in Vegas.
Yeah, and that's the big fear. You're right, Curtis. The big fear is that a player will get into a bad spot, and because of his financial woes, because of trying to do too much with too little money or spending all the multi-millions he's made and doing something illicit or gets in trouble with it and is going to lose it all unless he does something illicit to save it, you're right. That's the big worry for the league and for this whole scenario. And, you know, when the league started decided the Raiders were going to move to Vegas, that opened that up into a new age, and we're going to have to examine it.
I don't think that geography matters, Vegas or not. I really don't. I mean, I hear what – and Andrew Brandt said this. Once they moved to Vegas, the league announced that it was moving to Vegas now, what, a year and a half ago? Maybe just a little bit over a year. It was hard for the NFL – the NFL we're talking about here – hard for the NFL to talk about keeping gambling and football separate because of fantasy football and because the league was in Las Vegas now. But look, if you're gonna influence a game, it doesn't matter if the player plays in Las Vegas or Buffalo or Green Bay, right?
That would not stop with the
you.
Internet.
Yeah, it wouldn't stop you. Not I mean, with, that's gambling's now, everywhere. I mean,
gambling's
that's
yeah,
you.
Gambling's prevalent in a lot of places, yeah. And that's not going to change. But I think now that if you legalize, we were just talking about it, the guys that are going to be mad at this now are the bookies and stuff. Well, those are the guys who are doing it illegally.
Yeah.
And, you know, not that they're going to go away. I mean, they're right. Still going to be, you know, the old timers or whoever. I don't know. Sure. I have no idea. But the simple fact of the matter is when you're working with a legal, legally recognized entity as a gaming outlet, if things go south for that outlet because they did something like they are out of business because everybody will go to a different one. So they have to work really hard at making sure that they look as good and as honest and as full of integrity as they possibly can. They don't want any shadows over their reputation as being forthright.
More on this when we return. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. What We Learned is presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had an interesting show today, a lot of interesting comments today, including some from our guest early on, Brandon Riley, second-year wide receiver from Nebraska, wound up playing or on the roster for 5 games last year as a rookie. And we asked him if it's harder to get into the league than it is to stay into the league. Here's what he said.
That's exactly what my receiver coach in college told me. He said it's harder to get in than stay in. And, you know, I feel I'm still kind of on that bubble because I didn't get game snaps, so I'm still kind of, like, not all the way in, really. So, you know, I'm not where I want to be. But I feel like I got my foot in the door a little, and so hopefully I can, you know, get on the field and make plays and, you know, get both feet in the door. Yeah.
Brandon Riley had some good comments there. We also talked with Andrew Brandt, who is the NFL business expert from MMQB and from the Athletic website. Andrew Brandt, we talked about the gambling issue, and we asked him how the league is going to monetize legalized gambling and maybe even the players' union. Here's what he said.
And you better believe the players want their share. And I can picture this negotiation. The league's going to say, well, we're going to make more money overall for gambling, so it's going to go into the cap, and
sure.
you'll make more.
Sure.
And the players should say that's not enough.
Andrew Brandt, who brought up a lot of good points. Hey, I want something, and you asked a question for Brandon Riley, Steve. It's easier. Can you just explain this? Because you've played, how did you play, 13 years in the league?
Yeah.
You did. It's easier to get into the league than stay in the
league? No, it's easier to stay in the league than it is to get in the league. Well, you got a lot of guys who know how to play pro football, and you're trying to take a job. And it's hard to know how to do that without ever having done it before, particularly in a new environment, in a new offense, under new coaches. And you get a guy in there who's been playing under that system for 4 years. He's in his prime. He's been doing nothing in the offseason except – getting himself ready to play, staying in shape, working on his skills, working on the weaknesses of his game. And for a young guy to come in out of college who he was thinking he doesn't even know how to get his own apartment. He doesn't know how to pay his own bills. To start that life, it's hard to break into that. But as a pro, that's what you do.
We'll talk with Tre'Davious White about this issue tomorrow. He'll join us tomorrow on the show.
It's a good question. We've got to bring that up to him.
Yeah. George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Amater, Kelly Rude, J.J. Tirita, our producer, Jay Harris. And we'll see you tomorrow at noon. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.